Kevin, can you bump in with some traditional Costa Rican music? Is that possible, or is it too late for that?
Too late.
Yeah.
Is it too late?
Let's do it.
Oh, man. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill Leff. And Hannah Stanley, by the way, one of our friends from Flavor HD, is filling in for Wendy today. Hi, Hannah. How are
you? Well, hello to you.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. I'm happy you're back.
I'm thrilled to be back.
Happy birthday.
Oh, yeah. My birthday was over the weekend.
It was.
I got old over the weekend.
No.
Happy birthday.
Not just over the
weekend. Thank you, Steve. Right. Years ago. Many years ago, I got old. But I continued my tradition of getting older over the weekend.
Good for you. Many people don't get to.
That was exciting. A couple of things. First of all, when I left, and as I just told Steve Cochran, I was in Costa Rica for the week. My daughter Kylie had been working on a project there for a month, and Terry and I went to visit her, and then her project was coming to an end, so we all came back.
In the airport, are they allowed to get through security to come and greet you at the airport, or is it like here in the States where you have to go out through?
It's quite a screening process there. And I was telling you off the air how a couple of days we left late Saturday night into Sunday morning to come back. We took the red eye back from Costa Rica. I don't know how to say red eye in Spanish.
Well, it's
something
rojo.
Is it rojo
and
ojo?
Whatever eye is. Yeah,
that's
I think
ojo,
so.
Isn't it?
I think that's right.
I think,
yeah.
I think it's the rojo ojo.
But it's backwards, so it would be ojo
ojo.
Ojo de rojo.
See.
Right.
But I don't. Okay, well, that never mind.
Well, a couple of days
prior. Because I thought the red eye had to be from West Coast to East Coast.
Oh, it's possible.
Whatever. So you took the late flight.
We took the late flight, which was supposed to be like at 11:45, and then it was late getting there, so we left after 1 a.m. But a couple of nights prior to our leaving that airport, there was some dissident or national from a dangerous area that they found in the airport who wasn't supposed to be there. And the entire airport was on lockdown. This is in San Jose, Costa Rica. There's only two airports of any size there in the entire country of Costa Rica.
All right, so you're at the O'Hare of Costa Rica?
We were at the bigger of the two airports, right.
All right.
So the whole airport was on lockdown for 5 hours while they figured out exactly who this guy was and if he was a danger to the people of Costa Rica.
All right, so let's time this out. You got into the airport and through security.
It's a few days later.
Oh, okay. So this didn't affect you directly.
It didn't affect us, right, but everyone at the airport, everybody talked about that. And they said, it's a good thing this wasn't like Wednesday. And then we would say, what happened Wednesday? And everybody had a version of what happened. And I still don't know all the details. I don't speak much Spanish. I speak only a little bit of Spanish.
Okay.
Although that means how
but
come?
Why?
But why?
Yeah, I think.
When my daughter Kylie got there, you don't speak it either?
No.
When Kylie got there a little over a month ago, she spoke no Spanish at all. And in the month she was there, she speaks fluent Spanish now.
And
it's
fluid.
Amazing. And fluent Spanish.
Cerveza.
I can't believe what happened to her in just 4 short weeks. We got into the
cab. Is it a sink or swim kind of thing? You got
to
learn it.
She said, if you don't know it, no one will talk to you. And she wants to talk to people.
It's lonely.
So the one thing I will tell people, if you've never been to Costa Rica or that area in Central America, is we were in the rainforest. We stayed in the rainforest just on the edge. And things come out of the rainforest, animal and bug-wise, that's like stuff that you would have dreams or nightmares about. It just comes out of the rainforest.
Who would dream about these things?
Well, I was like several times on the trip. One of my favorite horror films is this film, The Mist. Did you ever see The Mist? It's a Stephen King story.
No.
It's about.
Might have read it, but I haven't seen it.
It's a short story in one of his books that they made into a feature length film. And in it, they do
that
some experiments.
Well.
Doesn't always go well. Sometimes it goes well. These bugs come out that are just like prehistoric bugs. Well, the bugs that we saw in Costa Rica made those bugs look like sissy bugs.
Well, you know, it's temperate there.
Yeah, the climate is so strange. It rains like crazy. Rain like you've never seen before, thus the term rainforest. And then, like 13 seconds later, it's the sunniest you could ever imagine. And then it just changes back and forth with no rhyme or reason. And the locals are oblivious to this because they're amazed.
It's their norm.
I guess it is. But when you drive through the towns, they all have they're not big on modern appliances, so they don't usually have dryers. So almost every house you pass by has a clothesline, and every day there's clothes on the clothesline that is all wet because it rains constantly.
So do they need to wash them, or does the rain just cleanse them?
I don't know if they wash them, or if they're maybe, I don't know.
It feels possible. Like I think that there would be bug gunk on it, because the bugs would come out of the rainforest and land on the clothesline.
Right.
Yeah, let's go back to these bugs for a second. Are we talking,
Kevin,
like, how big? Because I
I was afraid to photograph it because I thought any movement, anywhere near the bugs, any movement at all could drive it crazy and come after
me.
Are we talking like as big as your face?
Smaller than my face, but not by much. But there was one bug on the side of our room, and it was there for 2 days, and it was like a dragon. It had giant wings.
Just plotting.
And
just
like, I know. Every time we saw this, I broke the Guinness Book of World Record for opening and closing a hotel room door faster than anyone in history. Because even though it wasn't right by the door, I'm like, but that bug has a brain bigger than mine, and it knows how to time it. It'll fly into our room, and then I'll have to go home early.
All right, so what kind of – was it a bug that had wings and
it
could fly?
It looked like a dragon.
And, but
you know how they call dragonflies, but you go, well, that doesn't look like a dragon. It
well,
just
I don't
like –
I mean, dragons are really – it's kind of subjective.
This looked like if you close your eyes and I said to you, there's a dragon coming at you. What you're imagining, that's what this bug looked like.
All right. Did you not figure out what it was?
I don't know what it was.
Because I would like to look it up.
And whatever you tell the locals, like we described animals to the locals.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we, you know, some night we'd go to a restaurant, we would tell people about an animal we saw in the forest. It makes them laugh like crazy because they're so used to it.
You're like, it's the black mist. Remember in Lost when
right,
the black mist would
right.
come after you?
They just, they, you know, whatever you tell them, they think, oh, that is so funny.
Have you seen Luna moths around here?
Yeah, like I know what those are.
Okay, so we had that happen outside our house. We had a Luna moth land on our garage mm-hmm. once, and that was freaky deaky because that was as big as I needed to be here in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're big. Now, in addition to the bugs, there was another animal that I'm not much of a fan of, and that's the bat. And when they
but the bats eat the bugs.
The bats are supposed to eat the bugs, but I think even this bug is like, really?
Bring
seriously? are you going to challenge me? I'm like a dragon. Every day, every single day we were there, there was this screen where our shower was, and we're right in the rainforest.
Was the
we're
shower inside?
It. Yeah, the shower was
inside.
Because
sometimes they do that. They have the outside showers.
But you had giant, like you could slide it open so it would seem like you were outside, except
the window?
All day, every day. Yeah, there was this partition that you could slide open if you wanted to.
And was it screened?
Yeah, it was screened.
Okay,
luckily,
that would be good for me. Yeah,
because the bats would all come to the screen and stay on the screen. So when you looked out, what would be a normal, you know, a beautiful landscape of a volcano and trees, all you saw was these bats that had attached themselves to the screen.
Why? But were they attracted to the light?
I don't know what attracted
them. Like the crazy bugs, you know.
I don't know what attracted them. But they were there every day but one. On the last day, they were like, all right, we had your fun with you.
You're leaving. Our job
right.
is done here.
We'll find some other American to screw with. All right. We have a big full show for you today. We're thrilled that you're here. Hannah Stanley's filling in for Wendy. We'll tell you what's coming up next. It's Bill and Hannah on WGN. Now, this is some traditional Costa Rican music, Kevin. Thank you very much. It's Bill F. in for myself and Hannah Stanley, who's in for Wendy Snyder today. We can be reached at 312-981-7200. Call us or text us at that number. Both will work. A couple of quick things, other quick things about Costa Rica. Number one, any shop that you pass by has mannequins that I think we would have done away with sometime in the 50s or 60s, like the old style of mannequins. But the one
with
difference
the bouffants?
Is... They have a lot of hair, but they just look dated. Like all the mannequins look dated. They're not like
it's
our mannequins.
Because they spent too much time in the sun.
That's probably part of it.
They did not take proper precautions.
But the best part is, all the women mannequins have comically large breasts. Like impossibly large.
Are they very pointy?
No, they're not pointy. They're just impossibly large. To the point where, and it's just a thing there. I don't know. It's no big deal to them, but you could always spot the people that were either American or from other places because you were just stopping your tracks.
Because you're taking selfies pointing
right.
like, what?
Comically pointing at them. Yes. Yes, absolutely. And then from a food standpoint, because I know how much you love food.
I do.
Explain this to me because I thought that this was only something that happens in America, but it happens so much more in Costa Rica than it happens in America. Do you ever go into a restaurant and you don't have reservations at the restaurant and you go in and you say, yeah, we need a table for two or for four or whatever. And then they look around and they go, do you have reservations? And you go, well, no.
No, but could you squeeze us in? There's 18 tables here.
That happened every single place we ate for the entire week. They explained to us when we got there the importance of reservations, that if you're going to eat anywhere, we got in on a Sunday night at 9 o'clock and I didn't know if any place would be open. And I said to the guy at the hotel, is your restaurant still open? And he said, yes, it's open till 10 o'clock. And I go, good. Do you think you could get us in, the three of us, at the restaurant? And he goes, do you have reservations? I go, no,
obviously
we
not,
just
or I would not be
here.
Asking.
So he goes, we could try to do something for you, but I cannot guarantee without reservations. And I go, we'll see what you can do,
right?
Because we've not eaten in 11 hours. So we go to the restaurant.
And
there
he
the
said, that is your own fault.
That is your own fault. Be careful of the dragon bug. He will kill you. So we go to the restaurant there without the reservations, and I say to them, there's only two other tables out of 30 that are being serviced. So we go up, and I go, could I get a table for three? And he looks at the one, there's a hostess there and a guy working the board, and they look at each other and it's like, sir, without the reservations, it's going to be very difficult. And I go, but there's open seats. So they do that thing that you've seen them do in America. They look at, there's like a seating chart, and they
it's a dry erase board.
Right. They write down a number, and then they cross the number out, and then they write down another number, and they cross it out, and we will try to seat you, but
next time... Well, that was technically them working on their taxes. That had nothing to do with you being seated.
That had something to do with it.
Now,
they do that everywhere, in every restaurant.
Part of what that is when you walk in and you see empty tables,
yes,
and they're not seating, and they're like, we're very crowded, we can't serve you. It's either one of two things. They don't have the wait staff to properly handle those extra tables because they cut somebody.
No, I know that. But there were only two other tables in the whole restaurant.
Or they've cut the kitchen staff.
Oh, okay. That could be part of it, too. But
so it's
but
one
Hannah,
of...
trust me, every restaurant for lunch and for dinner, if you go in without reservations...
Because that's a ruse. They're trying to get paid. They want a little something under the...
I guess.
I have no idea. I don't know if they're working on...
They're also extremely proud. Every restaurant there is very proud of their ceviche, which you've had
ceviche.
Before.
Ceviche. Mm-hmm.
And for people who don't know, this is like it's octopus and it's shrimp and it's some sort of fish.
It can be a variety, scallops, a variety of different seafood.
Right.
But instead of actually cooking it properly with heat the way you would to assure that you kill bacteria and other things. It's actually cooked within the acid of the fruit juices that are used. So it's a lemon or a lime.
And they serve
juice.
It on a cracker or a small piece of bread.
It can be. Yeah.
But no matter what restaurant, like if you say to somebody, hey, we're new in town, where should we go? And they go, you must go to Esteban's.
Yes, and
go,
we'll try the ceviche.
You must, when you're there, you tell them you want the ceviche.
That's what people say, where do I eat in Chicago? And everybody says, Ditka's, get the pork chop. That's, that's the same thing.
But it's, for every single restaurant there, that's all they talk about. And then when you tell people, they go, where did you eat? And you go, I was at Ricardo's. Oh, did you have the ceviche? Yeah, we had it. How was it? It was like every
he
ceviche
we've
ever had.
He puts in two-thirds the amount of scallops. And his are sea scallops.
Oh, they're so good. But you must make the reservation.
Scallops.
You cannot get in without the reservation.
So did you eat?
Yeah, we ate constantly.
Or did you just have to make reservations?
No, they all let you in, but they look at you like, next time we must insist.
You crazy American.
You must make the reservations. If you want the ceviche, you must make the reservation. Okay, we'll do that next time.
I wonder because it's, I would guess it would be fresh. Because,
everything was so fresh.
Right, and so maybe that's it. We're at the end of the night or whenever.
Yeah.
They're thinking, you don't have the ceviche for them.
Could be. I know.
Because people are coming.
One time Terry ordered it and the waiter forgot to bring it and I thought he was going to jump off of a bridge.
Because he was so embarrassed.
My wife said, hey, we never got the ceviche. Oh, this is the set. He brought his kids out. He showed us. I have a family, please.
I'm a man of honor. Please don't hurt me.
Please.
So was the ceviche all that you would
it was
dreamt
average
that it would be?
Everywhere we had it. But everywhere we had it, that's all they talked about. Like on the way out, they go, thank you so much for coming. And remember, next time you are here, the ceviche is so good. Remember, tell your friends.
But you said it was average.
It was.
So you've had it better elsewhere?
Everywhere I've ever had it, I've had it, you know, 30 times in my life. It's always the same. It's never better. It's never worse. And
what
I don't
are you
even
missing?
Want to
Cilantro?
Order it. I don't even want to order it. But they're like, you're here. You must have it. You came in. We let you in without a reservation. You must have it. All right, I'll have a little bit of it. All right, a break, some news, and then more show coming up. It's Bill F. along with Hannah Stanley at WGN. Have a holly jolly Steve, Christmas. Thanks so much. It's Bill F. and Hannah Stanley, who's in for Wendy. Wendy's taking the week off.
I'm dancing on her behalf.
I saw you dancing. Yeah. That was very nice.
And you can, too, at WGNradio.com. Watch live.
The studio looks very Christmassy. Thanks
Festive.
To our friends at Tree Time who came in and decorated it last week. And downtown Chicago looks beautiful. If you've not been downtown yet, you owe it to yourself to come down and take a look. The decorations are up, and especially with the snow.
Gorge.
Yeah, it looks very, very pretty. While I was gone, Hannah, I said to everybody as I was leaving, I said, please, I'm only going to ask one thing while I'm gone. Make sure that the Hancock building doesn't start on fire.
And gosh darn it.
And that's the thing that happened while I was gone was the Hancock building started on fire. Now, I saw a little bit of video of this yesterday after I returned, and I saw more pictures of it today. It's almost a miracle that it wasn't way, way, way worse.
Well, anytime you have a high rise that catches on fire in any component, it mm-hmm. just is horrifying, mm-hmm. towering inferno style.
I can't believe, I mean, I know there were some minor injuries. I guess 5 people got injured. But when I saw the video of it and I saw the pictures of it, it looked to me, I'm telling you, the first thing I thought is that building's going to go up in flames.
And it was it wasn't. 50th floor, and it was a bedroom. That's a residential floor, 50th. I think from that point up until you get to the restaurant, that's residential.
Somewhere in the 40s, I think it starts as
residential. It starts,
because
I think 45 is the pool.
Yeah.
And so it became residential, and there are, of course, systems in place to help with the residents and occupants of the building who would be there. The fire department has that all.
They did not evacuate the building.
Nope.
And I was thinking to myself, if I knew the building was on fire, even
you yourself would self-evacuate.
Oh, in a second, just as a safety precaution.
I err on the side of caution. I was telling you when I lived over by there across the river, actually, I lived in a high rise, mm-hmm. and I came home once and there was a fire in one of the units. And they asked me what floor I lived on. And they said, oh, you're OK. You can go back in the building. And I went, no, I'm good. I'm okay. I don't need to go back in the building that is at least in part aflame.
In normal circumstances, if there's a building on fire, they'll evacuate the floor that the fire is on and one above and one below.
Typically.
That's standard?
That's what I believe is standard.
So why?
Because I'm the nerd who read the fire code before I moved into a high rise. Right. Yes.
But if you knew, like if you were going into a building and you saw some smoke and you knew there was some fire activity of any kind, wouldn't you go, I'll let you guys do what you do, and as soon as I get the all clear, I will return.
That's exactly what I did.
To my building.
I'm like, if there are news crews here, I will just hang with them.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
But Saturday was a particularly high foot traffic day in the city, even though we had that weather that was really in, I guess they would call it the collar counties, right?
Yeah.
Because it didn't get crazy down here. We mm-hmm. had, you know, 13 inches in some suburbs, but down here it was only a couple inches. But mm-hmm. so the parade was going on, the Michigan Avenue Light Parade.
Right.
And so it was.
But not simultaneous to the fire. The happened
the
first.
The fire was
right?
struck, I think we got the all clear that it was struck at like 4:30.
Yeah.
And I happened to be down here already. But it was, the parade did not start officially until 6 is when they kicked it off, really like right up there, a block or two away. And then it does proceed south on North Michigan Avenue, which is hard to say.
Right.
But
this fire was caused by a candle, we learned earlier today.
Yes. Which I'm not a candle person, so I don't get why. And it was the middle of the afternoon and it was burning in a bedroom, so I don't know if he was napping and just he or she.
Some sort of satanic worship? Is that what you're thinking?
I don't know if you would call it lifelike, realistic. They have such realistic candles, electronic candles, that flicker and do all kinds of fancy things. And that just seems to be the way for me to go. And they last.
You're going to put Wicks and Sticks out of business with this sort of talk. You know that, right?
They still
you're
exist.
You're getting angry calls on every line from Wicks and Sticks owners across the country. Please.
I mean, I think candles are fantastic in the middle of a table
setting.
The
Yankee Candle Company just identified you as a redcoat.
Yep. Try flying now. You're going to be on a no-fly list. Thanks to Yankee Candle.
But I just don't. I'm not a candle person. So I feel terribly that this happened.
For safety reasons or just aesthetics? Why are you not a fan of?
Honestly,
candle?
It's more open flame kind of bothers me.
Yeah.
All right. I'm a stickler for safety.
Well, will this change the rules there at the Hancock Building for candle usage?
I'm quite sure it will not.
I hope not.
No, but it really does. It always strikes me as funny when I would go into someone's bathroom during a party and they'd have a candle burning. And I appreciate the effort for
aroma. Save any guests any embarrassment.
Right. You know, and that I appreciate. But I'm thinking the hand towels are right there.
Right.
This has got danger written all over
it.
Maybe a
huge
Robinson.
Bottle of Glade would do the same thing as a candle, wouldn't it?
Open the window.
Right. Something like that.
It just seems that. But it really was pretty aggressive. Flames were shooting out the side of the building.
How was it not worse? How could this have not been worse? Like, as I was seeing the video, I'm thinking, this is going to be such a terrible thing, and it wasn't. They took care of it quickly.
They struck it rather quickly. They did elevate it to a 211, which I told you I thought high rises were an automatic 211.
Yeah.
But they did elevate it to that, which just means extra units come.
Yeah.
So it could have been worse, but they, I don't know. I don't know. Do the windows open in the Hancock?
Oh, I don't know the answer to
that.
Didn't
you work there?
I did work there. I don't know if the windows opened. It wasn't my job to
open
any windows.
So then at some point, the fire then burst out the window.
I guess.
So then we had glass shattering on the sidewalk.
I told a story. This is a little over a year ago. I was in a building. I was getting lunch in a building downtown that was having a fire drill while I was in there. So they moved us to another floor, and I just wanted to get a sandwich and leave. It was across the street where I can't think of the name
Corner
of the
Corner Bakery.
Yeah, Corner Bakery.
You and I have been there.
I was in there, and they're having a fire drill. So they forced us to another floor, and they explained to us at the time what happens during a fire, because we were on the second floor, and I'm thinking, boy, if I was on the second floor, if there was a terrible fire, I would just jump the one floor. And they explained, no, you can't open any windows during a fire
because
the fire
it.
Spreads quickly.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
I was doing an evacuation plan for a different building that I worked in. Mm. And they said, okay, well, we're going to have everybody go out these side exits, and then we'll have them walk around in front of the building. And I kind of went, and one of the fire department officials went, there's going to be glass.
Yeah,
we don't want people walking in front of
this
building.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
All right. In a second, more hazards having to do with the holiday season. We'll explain that in just a little bit. It's Bill Leff and Hannah Stanley in for Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and Hannah Stanley, who's in for Wendy. We were just talking about the fire that took place over the weekend at the Hancock. Joining us right now, Joe Schneider, making a return appearance to the show. Joe is a 15-year Allstate agent with offices in Lincoln Park and Old Town right here in Chicago. Joe, thanks for coming back. That doesn't happen very often with our guests.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm glad I made the cut.
You're very, very welcome. No, it's always on the guests' behalf. They're the ones who decide.
Your choice.
I've done it. I don't need to go back. We were just talking about this fire at the Hancock, which was started by a candle, and this kind of leads in what we were going to talk to you about anyway, which is the hazards of the holiday season. What are your thoughts on this, about what went on over the weekend there?
Well, you know, Allstate recently conducted research to learn about the most common property losses during the holiday seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, fire is one of them. I think a lot of it is common sense. The one in the Hancock Tower, it was a candle that was left unattended.
Yeah.
As we move into the holidays, you know, you'll see more kitchen fires.
Mm-hmm.
People are obviously cooking more, but they're also doing other things, watching TV, listening to Christmas carols, checking their email. So the important message is just focus on what you're doing, especially
right.
when you're in the kitchen.
The Bears will be playing the Packers on Thursday, which means everyone, including Grandma, is going to be drunk. She's not going to be thinking clearly, and that leads to disaster many times, doesn't it?
It does, and that's the other thing. People fall asleep with the stove on. Make sure you don't leave the fire unattended. Those are all issues that can happen in the holiday season.
We see these stats on the commercials about the turkey fryers. Is that overblown, or is that really a thing where these grease fires, people set their garages on fire?
I've definitely seen some videos on YouTube of that happening. As far as the stats go, I don't really know, unfortunately, but I'm sure that's definitely something to keep in mind as well.
Thaw the turkey thoroughly.
Always thought. Is it standard if you have homeowners insurance or renters insurance, a fire like this is normally covered under that contract, isn't it, normally?
It should be, yeah.
Yeah.
Any personal property, as well as if the person was negligent in any way with that candle, the liability could come into play to cover some of the damages as well.
I know you say common sense, and I don't doubt you on this at all, but there's so much going on during the holiday season that sometimes the common sense is just kind of pushed aside a little bit, isn't it?
It is. A couple things to keep in mind if you're going out of town. I've run into a few situations where people actually turn their heat off to save a few bucks. That is not a good idea.
How come? Why is that?
Because your pipes can freeze.
Oh, yeah.
So you definitely want to leave the heat going, even if it's at a lower temperature than normal. Another tip is, leave the faucet on at a slow drip. That will keep the water going through the pipes so the water doesn't freeze in the pipes.
So is that if you've typically had issues with freezing pipes in the past or just in general?
No, just in general.
Is it just one faucet?
Actually, it's recommended a couple.
Okay.
And then if you do have a faucet that's near, if the exterior pipe, you can open up the cabinet so that you can get warm air in there to warm up the pipes as well.
Yeah, and I guess the answer, I think you touched on this a little bit, you just want it on an occasional drip out of the sink, right? Is
Absolutely.
That what you're looking for?
Yeah.
Claims go up. Certain claims go up during the holiday season. What are those claims?
Burst pipes, smoke, and missing property. Theft is a big one. Again, I think this is kind of common sense, but if you are going to have gifts delivered to somebody, either require a signature. If they're not going to be home, you can have it sent to their office.
Right.
Again, Black Friday's coming up. Everybody's going to go crazy and do a lot of shopping. And, you know, again, use common sense. Don't take all the goods that you just bought, throw it in the back seat so the thieves can see it.
Right.
Take the time and put it in the trunk.
I know. I think Amazon is one of the retailers that does this online. You can actually have gifts shipped or presents, packages shipped to local establishments in your neighborhood and then go pick them up there. And so it provides security because somebody's going to have them. And if they're not there, they're going to be locked up in the meantime.
Yeah, absolutely. Any precaution that you can take is important.
You're probably too young to know this, but there was a time where many of the Christmas trees, there was a trend of having like an aluminum-looking Christmas tree,
yes.
And you weren't supposed to put lights on those trees because they would just go up in flames. Is that still an issue with people? Do people know which trees can have lights on them and which could not?
I think the biggest issue is, you know, watering the trees and making sure a real tree has water.
I never
thought
of that.
Because that can
dry
it out, and with those lights, you can catch the tree on fire.
Yeah.
So, evergreens. They were called evergreens.
Evergreens was right.
Yeah, that's what they were called. So are you still seeing claims for Christmas tree fires?
They do see an increase in those as well during the holiday time, definitely.
So if you have an average policy, a normal policy, if there is such a thing, I mentioned homeowners or renters insurance earlier, what do you have to do to your policy to make sure you're covered for all that sort of thing, Joe? What do you do for that?
Well, I think the most important step is to have a chat with your agent. The agent will go over the policy line by line to make sure that you're adequately insured.
Yeah. Is business good in the insurance company business? Is everybody pretty much doing what they need to do?
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What do we have to worry about or be concerned about as far as weather claims go with trees and property?
This time of year, you do run into a lot of wind claims. It's been really windy here in Chicago as of lately, so we've seen a lot of roof claims. But you also run into, with our first snow of the season, you'll see some ice damming.
Yeah.
So make sure your attic is properly insulated, because if the attic gets too hot, that's going to cause the snow on the roof to melt, freeze. And then you're going to have some water coming into your house through ice damming claims.
Right. Ooh. Do icicles ever kill anybody? Could you get an icicle just pierce you and kill you?
I don't know.
Because I've never seen it.
So.
Everybody has one or two on their house, so you go, oh, that could kill somebody.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be bad.
Yeah. Those are the ones my daughter wants me to get so she can play with.
Right. What about this? And you're the perfect person to ask about this, Joe. I always like to shovel the driveway four times a season. But in Chicago, you got to do it four times a day sometimes. Am I responsible if somebody's walking past my house and slips on my sidewalk because I didn't shovel the driveway? Am I responsible for that, or who's responsible?
You know, that's a very good question. And I would have to say that the claims people would probably know that better. But I do know, you know, the city is requiring you now to shovel the front of your sidewalk.
Yeah.
But I also know from a claims perspective, the second that you do take that action, you open yourself up to liability.
That's what I've heard. That it's better to not do it. That's what I've heard.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, you may be asked to testify in a court case or two against me.
I'll
defer stay close.
That to people smarter than me.
Please stay close.
Are we seeing? We hear these fears, and Bill made sure that no one except for Cochran told people that he was out of town because people are putting their information out on social media. We're leaving town. Merry Christmas, everybody. We'll see you in 2 weeks. We're going to Costa Rica. Are we seeing theft and break-ins increase because of this?
Oh, thieves are definitely savvy. You know, the recommendation is definitely if you're on Facebook, which most people are, make sure your settings are private.
Yeah.
So that, you know, John Q. Public can't go see that you're out of town and then target you and basically rob you blind. So definitely, you know, we recommend making sure it's private and try not to give out too much information like that.
Is it okay to unfriend somebody if they come in and rob you while you're on vacation?
Absolutely.
It is okay. All right.
You missed it. It was National Unfriend Day the other day. Do security systems, home security systems, help with your rate?
Yeah, absolutely.
They do.
Any monitored alarm system is going to give you a discount on your homeowners or your condo insurance.
And you can have those also for fire and other things than break-in.
Yeah, nowadays you can have a completely wired house from your, you know, thermostat to lights.
Everything.
To garage door, you name it. Yeah.
That's good.
I keep hearing about a service, and I don't know the name of them, where your doorbell is hooked up to your internet so that on your phone, like you could be anywhere in the world and you'll get some sort of a text or something saying somebody's ringing your doorbell, and you could respond to them.
They were actually on Shark Tank. And
were they?
They didn't get a deal on Shark Tank. But then Virgin, who owns Virgin?
Freddie Laker.
No, Virgin Airlines, the Virgin guy.
Yeah,
I think that's him. Freddie Laker.
He invested like $100 million into that business.
Branson.
And
Richard Branson.
Richard Branson.
Richard Branson.
Oh, wow. All right. So that sort of thing will normally help your rate a little bit if you have that.
I mean, that won't
anti-theft.
Per se, but the alarm
similar
will definitely.
Yeah.
But doesn't it feel very Ferris Bueller?
Yeah,
I'm
does.
Not home right now,
right.
But please leave your package at the door.
Right. Well, it was great to talk to you again, Joe. You'll come back again, won't you?
I'll come as long as you'll have me.
We'll get you a discount next time. It's your third time.
Sweet.
Joe Schneider, a 15-year Allstate agent. He has offices in both Lincoln Park and Old Town. If people want to find you, Joe, and reach you, where's the best bet?
Email joeschneider@allstate.com.
Perfect. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. A quick break and then some news. It's Bill Leff and Hannah Stanley on WGN. Steve, thanks a lot. It's Bill Leff and Hannah Stanley in for Wendy today. Wendy's on vacation all this week. We're joined in studio right now by Kristen McQueary. Kristen is a member of the Tribune's editorial board, and there's a whole lot of news stories to cover. So, Kristen, thanks very much for being here.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Really appreciate it. If you wouldn't mind, I want to start out by talking to you about Spike Lee's movie, Chi-Raq. There's a lot of controversy surrounding the movie. There's a lot of controversy surrounding the title. Everything having to do with this movie is making people angry. You just wrote about it recently. Let's start out with the title. People are so upset about the title for obvious reasons. It makes our city look like a war zone. But let's be honest, it has been a war zone.
It is. I mean, it's kind of an accurate depiction of the city. I hate to break it to the mayor.
Yeah.
We've editorialized in favor of allowing, you know, we have First Amendment speech rights here. Yes, you might think it's offensive, but it is kind of in some ways an accurate depiction of the city. And you know, we have supported Spike Lee's right to name his movie what he wishes.
Right.
And I think so the premiere was last night, and I think the what will be interesting to me, I do want to see it. This is almost like a musical. Have you read about it?
Yeah, a little bit.
So, you know, we're leaving this in Spike Lee's hands, and Jennifer Hudson plays one of the lead roles. Jennifer Hudson, in her own personal life, as you'll remember, lost her mother and her nephew to gun violence. So you almost have to trust that someone in that type of position would never take lightly death and violence that we are experiencing in the city. But I can't get my head around how you can have like a musical element to something so haunting.
What is it? You said it's almost like a musical. And what does that mean, it's almost like a musical?
There are, it's based on a Greek play. And so there are parts where there are song and dance numbers. And really it's about this this woman who tries to recruit people to go on a sex strike and withhold sex until their male partners, you know, stop the gang banging. And there was actually a real movement by one person to do that in Chicago.
Oh.
I'm count me out.
Right.
But
that's fair. All right, I'm writing your name down. Kristen is out on this. Okay. Yeah. All right.
But it seems very similar to maybe an iambic pentameter type flow to it, where it's a freestyle rap rhythm type. I haven't seen it, but I'm hearing mixed reviews on kind of the theme throughout.
And if it just works, like, does this work? I think when he first said he was going to do this movie and he testified about it a little bit before city council, I was imagining a documentary, you know, a very grainy, raw type of presentation. And so then as we learned more about it, I can't figure out how this is going to work, how this is not going to minimize, you know, actual, you know, violence.
The one quote I heard from a protester, and I think I heard it during Steve Cochran's show, was that the name Chi-Raq was actually something that the gangbangers themselves had started calling the area. And that's why they didn't like the glorification of it and the fact that they used it as the movie, because it almost took and validated what they were saying, that they had created a war zone in their own neighborhoods.
Right. I mean, Chi-Raq is a word, I believe it was part of the urban, it was welcomed into the urban dictionary a few years ago. So it is a term that is widely used now in rap songs, not just people who live in Chicago. But when you look at our shooting statistics and our homicide rates, it's tough to argue that in certain parts of the city that they're not living a war zone lifestyle.
Right. Realistically, Kristen, no matter what they call this movie and no matter what the subject matter of the movie is, it's not going to change what's going on in and around the city from a violence standpoint, is it? There's no gang member who says, wow, that title of that movie really hit home. I think I better play nice from now on. That's not going to happen.
I don't think it's going to happen. But from the people who were involved in the project, and you had like Father Flager, who has tried to make a difference. I mean, he has stabilized a very violent part of the West Side of Chicago through his religious outpouring. And I mean, I don't want to say that it will have no effect, but if we all had an answer to what would end all the violence, we wouldn't be sitting here. I mean,
right.
I don't blame them for trying.
Sure.
I guess what I'm saying.
Yeah. There's a phone call we want to take. Mark knows a little bit about this. Hey, Mark, thanks for joining us. What's up?
Hi. You know, people are kind of minimizing the whole thing with the sex strike, but it actually is based in reality. In Liberia years ago, the women went on a sex strike, and it actually ended a 14-year civil war.
Really?
Thousands and thousands of people were dying, and the women all got together from both sides of the civil war and decided that's how they were going to handle it.
I had not heard
that. It's actually based on a real thing.
Interesting. Well, thanks. Mark, do you have any intention at all of seeing this movie, Chirac?
Yeah, I will, absolutely.
You want to see it? Okay. All right. Well, thanks, Mark. Have a good week. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. We have many other topics to cover with Kristen McQueary. If you want to join in, we're at 312-981-7200. That's the call line and the text line. More after this. It's Bill F. along with Hannah Stanley on WGN. Kristen McQueary is here, a member of the Tribune's editorial board. We're talking about many things Chicago-related. This one more on a national scale, if you wouldn't mind, Kristen. Donald Trump, still among the leaders on the Republican side for president. He had an interesting little sequence of events happen with a rally protester the other day.
It's been a rough 96 hours for Donald Trump. I mean, and he is actually, you know, now leading, I think, by double digits in the polls. But his anti-Muslim rhetoric has sort of ratcheted up. He'd had a tweet over the weekend which was actually inaccurate, but he tried to list out like black-on-black crime, 96%, and it came from like a neo-Nazi website, and then he tried to defend it. It was actually wrong. He has talked about registering Muslims, making them register, making them wear badges. He talked about surveillance, that he would not be opposed to surveilling mosques. This is the leading candidate on the Republican ticket for president.
Right.
And so even though there is, I understand the fear, we wrote on the editorial board, we didn't see there being a problem with just touching the pause button and making sure when we are accepting refugees that we have a vetting process that's in place, not encamping them, not rounding them up, but just tapping the pause button, I think is reasonable. But Trump is just, he takes things too far, and it concerns me that he continues to lead in the polls.
So one of the things that they've suggested with the refugees is that if they're of Christian faith, that they have an easier process of getting in and remaining in the United States, where if they're Muslim, that would be a stumbling block to their acceptance. Is that correct?
They've talked about, I mean, if you look at how we vet them currently, and this goes for all refugees, it's a long process.
Yeah.
It takes years for especially Syrian, but even Iraqi refugees to be able to come into this country. And so I think another thing that he has suggested, that Trump has suggested, is that if you're Christian, then you wouldn't have to go through all of these, jump through all these hoops. And some of the other candidates have said that too. Again, you know, once we start targeting religious groups in this country, I think we're really violating our own morals and principles, and not to mention our Constitution.
It would be utterly impossible under this dictate for somebody who was of Muslim faith to write the word Christian on a form, even if they weren't. There's no way in the world they could fudge their way through that, right?
They couldn't possibly.
There's no way.
And our federal government is really on top of things,
right,
Bill, so that would...
Johnny
right.
on the spot.
I
just want to make sure.
Well, and that, this is only covering those that enter the country legally, would be going through this process. So we do have, as candidates have essentially described it, as squishy borders, where, I mean, they can come in through a variety of different ways illegally.
That is true. The biggest, I think, I just saw this from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, so I think it's pretty accurate. The biggest influx of illegal immigration, though, are Asians. So, I mean, I just think we have to be really careful when we start going down this path of letting fear make us do things as a country that are morally, you know, completely opposite of what we are founded on and our principles.
Do you think that with what happened in France a week ago Friday, do you think that automatically, because of those events, of what happened there, that becomes one of the major focuses, if not the major focus, of the upcoming campaign? Everybody now needs to think about, and sadly, the thoughts of protecting our country went away a little bit because it's been so many years since September 11th. But now all of a sudden, with what happened so recently in France, that's going to become a major issue, isn't it? It can't not be.
It did automatically. I mean, as soon as that happened, and I am not a fan of Ann Coulter,
yeah,
the ultra-right conservative radical, but she tweeted something immediately that said, Trump just won the nomination because he's been the most strident. And so, yeah, it completely changed the conversation and will continue to do so. The next debate, I'm sure, will be very different and probably centered on foreign policy and immigration and all these issues.
So if it's not Trump who benefits from this, who does get points and loses points because terrorism moves to the forefront again? Who do you think gains and loses?
The people who gain are the people who've been most vocal about it. So that would be the Trump, Ted Cruz, to some extent Marco Rubio, yeah, although he's a little bit softer. I mean, even somebody like Mike Huckabee, who's kind of in the background, has been, you know, really harsh on the issue. It hurts people, unfortunately, like Jeb Bush, who has more of a centrist immigration position,
yeah,
or John Kasich, governor of Ohio. John Kasich is actually starting a super PAC now to try to take down Trump.
Oh, is he?
So I'm interested to see how that inter-party play will happen if you have someone within the Republican Party finally trying to, you know, rein him in a little bit with money and advertising.
Yep.
The story we've been talking about or hearing a lot about this past weekend are the fact that you can be on a government no-fly list because you're on the terror watch list, but you're still legally allowed to buy a gun.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
It is crazy. And our gun laws, I was a proponent of concealed carry, but I think the NRA and some of those groups are radical in what they will not allow. And I go back to the Sandy Hook, when you had the slaughtering of 20 first graders and you had the parents of those kids sitting in the Senate gallery hoping to get one piece of legislation passed that was just going to do federal background checks,
mm-hmm,
and they could not get it passed.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can't pass sensible gun law, that the gun laws that law-abiding gun owners support, there's really no hope. For me, that was sort of the case closing.
Yeah, what's it going to take?
What's it going to take? Right.
And so you can't get on an airplane, but you can buy a gun legally here in the United States. And we know you can buy it illegally.
I'm sure it varies state to state, and that's the problem. We don't have a federal background check system. So I'm sure there are federally licensed, responsible gun shops that probably have access to that or would have grounds to reject you. But it's state to state. That's the problem. Everybody has their own rules on who you can sell guns to.
It's not fair to bring this up because we only have a couple minutes, but the story is worthy of it, so I will bring it up. There's only a couple minutes left, Kristen, but let's talk a little bit about the Chicago Teachers Union's downtown rally that's coming up. What do we need to know about this?
So they're rallying today. They are, I don't think the teachers quite understand what the word bankruptcy means.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a school system that is about to go belly up. In fact, we have Forrest Claypool, the new CEO, coming to talk to the editorial board momentarily to give us an update. They want a bailout from Springfield. But the teachers are talking about striking again. Last time they struck, they got 17.6% raises over a 3 or 4 year contract. They still have taxpayers picking up almost all their pension costs. And so I think at some point the teachers need to realize you have to give a little bit more, and mm-hmm, you're going to have to pay a little bit more to your pension. Other teachers pay 9% into their own retirement accounts. Chicago public school teachers have only been paying 2%. And so that's the sticking point. That's what Forrest Claypool is trying to get them to do, is to phase in gradually picking up more of their own pension costs.
I know that money issues take place in all 50 states and all around the world, but it seems for some reason, like in Chicago and in the state of Illinois, we seem to have more of a crunch. What are we doing wrong here in the city and in the state that other places do a little bit better than us?
I think it's one party rule. And I don't want to just blame it on the Democrats. If we had the Republicans who ran everything here, we would probably have a different set of problems. But when you have such resistance to any different train of thought, and we just keep reelecting people who think the same way,
yeah,
we have a totally democratically controlled city and state. And so there's no pushback. It's just a crowding out of other opinions.
But if you look at what's gone on nationally on a higher level, not just budgetary, but otherwise, people always point at the fact that it's the Republicans and the Democrats constantly in gridlock. But you're saying almost the opposite here, huh?
They're both problematic.
Yeah.
But I just think we are uniquely situated where we've had total Democratic control in the city forever and in the state since from 2002 until Governor Rauner was elected.
Yeah.
So that's a long time. And sorry, but the state was badly mismanaged during that time.
It seems.
As
it really
was the Chicago public school system,
yeah.
If we go looking through recent CEOs.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I would be standing on the line probably with CTU if I had to deal with the bureaucratic mess that is CPS.
How about that? Kristen, thanks. Appreciate you being here. It's Kristen McQuarrie. Read her in your Chicago Tribune. We'll be back after this. It's Bill F. along with Hannah Stanley on WGN. Hey, Kim, thanks very much. It's Bill F. along with Hannah Stanley, who is filling in today for Wendy. Wendy will be back on Monday, a week from today, after the Thanksgiving holiday season, which, by the way, you just reminded me you will be filling in for Wendy and me on
Thursday. No, I'm only filling in for Wendy.
Oh, for Wendy.
And then Daniel is filling in for
me.
You.
All right, so that takes place both on Thanksgiving and the day after Thanksgiving.
Yes, from 10 to 12 to noon.
And then Rob Hart will be in for the second part of that show.
Yes, according to the grid that's in front of me.
All right, okay.
Yes.
Can we quickly talk about Thanksgiving just for a little bit? We're not going to talk about Thanksgiving. It's this Thursday, as you all know. Now, every year as Thanksgiving approaches, not every year, but more years than not, the topic has come up on the show. It's my least favorite holiday. And whenever I say that, two sorts of people react to that. Some people who say, what's wrong with you? Are you a communist? Thanksgiving is the greatest day of the year. It's everything that's good about the world. It's your family and it's all kinds of food and everything like that. And I understand that. And I love my family and I love food.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just something about that day that doesn't sit with me. And then the other people who respond to it always say, hey, I get you all the way. There's way too much pressure around Thanksgiving.
Finally, someone says
Someone's
it.
Someone's brave enough to say it's not the best day. Now, for years and years, it was not just my least favorite holiday, but it was my least favorite day of the year. It just didn't work for me. There was nothing about it that worked. I can't stand Thanksgiving. I hate the idea of having dinner at 4 o'clock.
Right.
That doesn't sit well with me. There's just so much about it. I don't like any of the foods that most people love about Thanksgiving. I was always sort of an outcast. I would bring Chinese food with me to whatever relative's house was having it. And then as the day progressed, people would come up to me and go, could I just get a little bit of the Kung Pao chicken? Just a little bit, not a lot. What do you guys do? How do you handle it at your family?
Well, for the past several years, I've been on the air. So we've had a little bit to readjust. And, and so my parents have typically hosted most of my life. And I will say my father's stuffing is one of my very favorite smells in the world. So when I was living at home and then, and now in years since I've been coming to the house, when I would walk in and smell that, you know, the celery and the onions getting ready for the stuffing, that was Thanksgiving for me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to do anything else except for smell that.
That's easy.
And that was a moment that hopefully I'll remember for forever.
Sure.
So then, this year now we are hosting, I think we did last year also. And we do steak. Because it's just so much. I
you like it better, right?
I don't like turkey.
Oh, thank you for saying that.
I don't.
Thank you
and,
for saying
and
that.
And I contend that the pilgrims were uncomfortable and miserable, and while they were giving thanks, and that's great, part of the ritual of making the turkey is so that we understand what they were going through.
Right.
And the hardship. Because
right.
it's a big stomping pain in the butt.
Yeah, it is.
It's a whole lot of carcass and not so much meat. And it's just, so we have found it easier and more enjoyable for fillets.
Think about the time element. People start cooking the day before for Thanksgiving. Some people more than one day before, and all the planning and stuff like that. And then the meal itself usually lasts about 20, 25 minutes for an entire day of setup, and the cleanup takes forever. Why wouldn't you make something that not only tastes better, but it's just more easier to do?
Reservations.
I don't understand. Like reservations. Well, that's what my wife and my daughters and I, just the four of us, went out to a restaurant last year. It was the best Thanksgiving we ever had. We're doing the same again this year. It's tough to find restaurants that are open on Thanksgiving. They're few and far between.
I've gone to Lowry's in the past.
Oh,
it's delightful.
Lowry's prime rib.
They do, and they do turkey.
Yeah.
They have that on the cart. They bring
What's
that around.
There's an Italian restaurant right behind our building.
Volare?
Volare is where we ate last year.
Mm-hmm.
Loved it.
Mm-hmm.
It was filled to the rafters. Everybody was in a good mood because I think everybody kind of had that same kind of idea that we had of, boy, why waste a whole day just cooking?
Now, I love cooking.
Yeah.
It's kind of my thing.
Yeah.
And so that's enjoyable. We're doing it later. We have 5 o'clock because I don't enjoy the 2 o'clock dinner.
Why are people eating at 2 o'clock and 3 o'clock?
But I think it's so that they're able to then sit down and watch football the rest of the day. And it does open up the rest of the time to spend time with your family, which is the whole point.
Right.
So we're getting, as you mentioned, we're getting many, many texts. 312 just says, Bill, I make lasagna on Thanksgiving. My mother-in-law does that.
That would be fantastic. Yeah. Why would... Really, it's so much better tasting. It's so much easier to prepare. Do that.
I'm a huge meatloaf fan. And so for years when we would be in Denver at my in-laws, my mother-in-law would make a meatloaf for me.
Yeah.
And it turned to be, that was the dish that everybody looked forward to.
Mm.
And we would, so then she went from a whole turkey to just a turkey breast.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm never making a turkey again. Cause so now she makes lasagna and a turkey breast on the side.
That's easier.
But I think if you're able to realize what you have too much of left,
yes.
If you're not eating it, then throw convention out the window.
Right.
Eat what you want.
I'm with you.
Whole point is to be with your family.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I love that part of it. I really do. Although there's always some relative, let's be honest, there's some relative there that you go, if only that guy wasn't here, this day would be so much better.
Yeah, we don't have that.
That guy. You don't have that?
No.
Everybody has that. There's no one guy, really?
No.
For my family, I'm probably that guy. All now right. That I think about it.
Mike, it might be you. Mike is on the phone. He is the anti-Bill and Hannah. Here we go. Mike, you're on WGN.
Yes, I am making this Thanksgiving for friends and family 9 deep-fried turkeys.
What's wrong with you, Mike? Why would you make that many turkeys? 9?
They're for friends, too. They don't want to spend the money for all the oil and the equipment because you figure to deep-fry a turkey, it's going to cost you about $150 for all the equipment. So I bought the oil already, and I don't want to go ahead and clean it and keep it and store it. So you can use the oil up to 4 times. So I have two cookers, and it only takes an hour to do a 20-pound turkey. I got them brining right now in different variations. You know, one's going to be a turkey with bourbon. Other one's with Jack Daniels. There's a Cajun one. And they're delicious. I don't understand why you guys don't like Thanksgiving. It's wonderful.
I like Thanksgiving. Don't get me wrong. Thanksgiving is wonderful. I've just had to tweak the holiday away from the Norman Rockwell photo of the gigantic bird that sounds like it's going to be at your house.
Well, yeah, but if you do the turkey and deep fry it, because I used to do it in the oven like my grandmother did and my mother. And once I had this, it eliminates. It's 5 minutes per pound. You just eliminate all that stress that the bird is taken care of. You can do all the other stuff and, your sides, and there you go.
But Thanksgiving is still 3.5 days away, and you're preparing stuff now.
Oh, you got a brine.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't say, no, they're in a brine. They're going to go in tonight. But you put them in a cooler, and that's it. It's easy peasy.
Now, and my dad and my husband.
That's a side dish, by the way, Hannah.
Easy peasy.
If you're doing, make sure the easy peasy's on the side.
That's, well, you have to, there's a lot of grating of potatoes goes into that. But my dad and my husband, and I can recommend this because it's spectacular, great flavor, is you grill the turkey. Which
right.
is, it's not as fast as frying it.
Right.
But it's yummy.
Yeah.
It's very good.
But grilling, you have a lot more grease. You know, you can catch on fire more than the deep frying.
Well, you're going to.
When you see them doing that, they put that in there so fast, they forget to turn off the flame before you put the turkey in there. And after you have brined it, you got to make sure you pat it down, and then you just slowly immerse it in there, and then you turn the flame back on. You set it and forget it. I've been doing this for the past 5 years. Knock on wood, never had anything happen.
All right.
But I hear people that grilled it, and it catches on fire because of the pan.
Mike, you're going to lose every holiday. You're going to lose one relative to a fire. That's just
not
a given.
Cool. Joey's just in here from Allstate.
All right.
That's not good.
All right.
Have a good time, Mike.
Bye-bye.
I hope it works for you. Take care.
Thanks so much.
But didn't he just disprove his own point? He said it's so easy. But this is Monday. Thanksgiving is Thursday. He's brining stuff now.
Well, brining doesn't take effort. You just have to make the brine and put it in it.
Do you know, like, the rest of the year, do you know 4 days in advance what you're going to want? Like, on any given Monday, do you know what you're going to have for dinner or have a taste for on Thursday?
If I'm meal planning the way I want to, yes.
Yeah. I never know a day in advance what I have a taste for.
But do you do the cooking and the shopping?
No, I well, do some of the shopping, okay. None of the cooking. We eat out all the time. It's so much easier.
You're those people.
It's so much better. There's no preparation. There's no cleanup. People bring stuff to your door. We've got numbers. We call the number. They bring us food to our house.
All right, let's go to Steve. Steve, you're on WGN.
Every year we have a theme for Thanksgiving. 2 years ago, we had an American barbecue theme. Ribs, steaks, and chicken.
Oh, that sounds
good.
Love
this.
Last year, we did Italian, and this year we're doing Mexican, and I'm in charge of the tamales.
Why doesn't everybody do this?
This is what
great.
The pilgrims would have done right. had they been introduced to world cuisine.
Right. That's so true.
Right.
And everybody loves it, don't they? Because it's different all the time.
It is, and it's not the same drab meal year
right.
after year. So.
Right.
So.
I like your idea. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah, it's an excellent idea. Thank you.
All right,
thanks
take care.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I love my dad's stuffing.
Yeah.
And that's
but you
everything
said
else
the smell of
away.
It. The taste it's, of it holds up, too?
I actually made a soup recipe out of the stuffing ingredients.
Yeah.
So it took away, you know, the breading and things from it, and
yeah.
it still had the same aromas.
All right.
It was marvelous.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
I would do it. I actually, of the Thanksgiving food, that's one of the only ones I can stomach. The rest of them just don't do it for me.
224 just texted in, Bill, you don't like Thanksgiving because you can't make toast. I didn't know Wendy was listening.
True.
Thank you, Wendy, for your comment.
All right. More of your calls, more of your thoughts. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to call or text. Some people love Thanksgiving. Other people, bad people, do not like it.
You included.
Where do you stand? Me included. Where are your thoughts on this? Give us a call or a text back after this. It's Bill F. and Hannah Stanley on WGN. It's Bill F. along with Hannah Stanley filling in for Wendy Snyder today. Wendy will be back a week from today after Thanksgiving, which just so happens to be our topic. Most of America loves Thanksgiving. Best day of the year, most people will tell you. But for some of us, it doesn't play out quite that way. I was telling you, Hannah, you could say to somebody, oh, I'm a cannibal, and I also don't like Thanksgiving. And people go, why don't you like Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
They'd let the cannibal thing slide, but they're very upset about the Thanksgiving angle of
yes.
it. The texts are proving me true.
Texts are definitely polarized.
Yeah.
And I love this one from 630. Green bean casserole, they serve that in hell.
Yeah, that would be the official side dish of hell, the three bean casserole. The green bean casserole.
Green bean
and
casserole.
Actually, I have a story about that, but let's take a call or two quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Start out with Joanne. She's been on hold for quite a long time. Hi, hello. Joanne. How are you?
Joanne, are you there?
Hi.
Hi.
Yes, I am.
A fan of the holiday or not?
Pardon me?
Are you a big fan of the holiday or not?
I am, but it kind of holds a little bit of sorrow for our side of the family.
Uh-oh.
It was when my dad kind of... fell ill
from
cancer.
Oh,
but anyways,
no.
I just wanted to let your listening audience know my daughter is hosting Thanksgiving this year.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of the traditional dishes, she's asked everybody to bring a snack, and we're going to be calling it Snacksgiving.
So it's much less pressure that way, isn't it?
Correct.
I would
and
think so.
And in her, what she is going to do, she is going to take the traditional turkey, mashed potatoes, dressing, etc., and make them in snack form. And I think it'll be something fun.
It could be, yeah.
All right, so this won't be like Cheetos, because that's what I would bring.
No, something more substantial.
No.
Yeah.
No. But it's going to be a bit of a fun time, so I just thought it would be something different.
I think it will be.
It'll
well,
be nice.
Thanks, Joanne. I hope that works out for everybody.
And I send my Thanksgiving blessings to everyone there at WGN and Bill and Anna and Wendy. You make my day.
Joanna, you're
thank
best.
You.
Thanks so much. Have a great holiday.
Okay. You
very
also,
nice of you.
Bob.
Thank you.
Bye.
That's so nice. Let's get Tom on real quick.
I wonder why. Tom, you're on WGN.
Bill, hi. I'm so 100% with you on this. 100%. Heck, the Indians never wanted to go to the first one.
I don't think they did. No, they did not. I don't even think, I'll be honest with you.
I don't think they were thankful.
No, they were not thankful.
No.
I don't think they had Thanksgiving. I think that's a myth. I mean, I think they had Thanksgiving, but it wasn't with turkey and stuff, was it?
I think
they had something
better. No, it was like corn, and the Indians wanted to eat some meat. They wanted to eat some, you know, some deer and some,
yeah.
you know, cool stuff like that.
Yep.
And guess what? When, if this is where I side with you again. if you are the one, and I am the one, the wretched bachelor that really no one wants to talk to,
oh.
I have to go there.
Yep. You're forced. You don't have any say in it, do you?
Yes, no, and you have to, it does, I mean, I've been in despair for 2 weeks.
Just waiting, over Thanksgiving, yeah.
But I have to give you some advice, Bill.
Sure.
You can lie. You can make up creative lies, and that works.
What, like what? What lie have you used?
Here's the best one,
yeah.
And you can only use it once, though. I have a new girlfriend and her kids. I tried to get, this is when I lived out of town. I had to get them on the plane and they freaked out,
oh.
You know, because of the 911 thing. So I had to come back. That was beautiful.
Sure.
Right, I'll try that with my wife. I'll go, I want to come to your sister's house for Thanksgiving, but my girlfriend, I just have a new girlfriend. I'll see what happens. I'm sure that'll be great.
You just had chemotherapy and you're going to be throwing
oh,
out. That's
golly.
Better. All right.
Oh,
I'll try that one.
Hey, my grandma.
But then you're labeled cancer, though.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, that's
that.
Not good.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, thanks. My grandma Virginia...
Tom took it too far. Did you notice
that?
He did.
He went a little bit. He tipped over.
I think he did.
Precipice off. My grandma used to always say, a lie stuck to is as good as the truth.
Yes.
So I think that she would back him up.
Yes. I'm pretty
just
sure
you
she
stick
would.
To that lie. You go.
Part of, like, in tracing this with me, because people always go, but there's so many good things about Thanksgiving, and there is, and I like spending time with my family. I really do.
That's the whole point.
That's all very nice. Although it's always weird when a house that's really set up to sit four or six or maybe eight at the most comfortably all of a sudden has 34 people and you're making tables out of pieces of wood and books and stuff because there's not
you're
enough
sitting
places.
On those you're sitting on those little like three-legged benches that they give away at the ballpark
right,
for free
right
and they're like the canvas
right.
sling
and that's I always good. Get sat by like there's somebody who's it's some cousin's friend who's in from out of town, and I'm sitting with them.
And they felt
and like,
bad because they were alone.
Yeah, so they're invited. And like, if you say the wrong thing about Eleanor Roosevelt, they get upset. And you just go, why are you upset about Eleanor Roosevelt? That was a long time ago. So there's always that element of it. The thing that always bothered me, though, was this. See if this applies to you at all. When I was growing up, all the guys sat in the living room and watched football, and all of the women were in the kitchen doing the cooking duties. And I always thought,
what part of this is supposed
is
to bother
really
me? The cooking
awful.
Duties part.
Yeah.
Yes.
Doesn't that bother you? Like I always go, but some of those women probably would be better served watching the football game, and some of those guys might be more valuable in the kitchen.
Absolutely.
Why did this become a stereotype of all guys must be sitting there and all women must be in there working? That always disturbed me.
Well, I think that it's shifted a little bit. Because before, wasn't it always one or two games, and now they play?
There was always one. And now
there's
the
Cowboys.
Three, either the Cowboys right. or the Lions.
Right.
And now there's three. There's wall-to-wall football. I believe it was America's way of saying, we know you've run out of stuff to talk to your uncle about, so just watch the games.
That's you entirely know? Possible. No, I think it is definitely nice for the families to get together,
right.
be them segregated or not,
right.
by gender and watching preference.
Right.
But that's the whole point. So I think the turkey itself, you can have turkey all the time.
Yeah. It's also fun to watch Uncle Mitch fall asleep, isn't it? There's always some uncle who's just
enjoy that trip to
dozing
fan, Uncle
off
Mitch.
During the meal and during the game. He's just constantly
but
nodding on and
the
off.
Person who's asleep is always the one who's in the most ideal place to watch the television from.
Right.
And you're like, seriously, go lay down.
Right.
We have rooms.
Right. I don't want to watch you sleep. What are you doing?
There's snoring and there's drool involved and it's not good. We did have a texter I want to mention that the reason you have an early dinner or supper, as some parts of the country would call it, one or two-ish, is so then you can have the other meal.
Yeah.
From
and why
the
are
leftovers.
We the fattest country in the world again? I can never remember. Because we're having two dinners on Thanksgiving.
I'm going to have to research that stat.
I think that has something to do with it. All right, we'll take a quick break. Then we'll find out what Steve Bertrand has on the Wintrust business launch. Stick around. It's Bill F. along with Hannah Stanley on WGN. Kim, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff, and then Hannah Stanley is sitting to my left. She's filling in for Wendy today.
As you look at your radio, though.
As everybody looks
I'm
at their radio,
the right.
you'll be on the right.
Right.
Yeah. I've asked Connor McKnight to stick around for just a little bit. Connor, how are you? Everything good?
Doing fantastic. You guys?
We're fine, except that there's a lot of shock here in the studio over this Jimmy Clausen thing. This is, I think it's the Bears saying it's not going to happen this year.
No, I know you and Jimmy were close.
Very close.
I know it was you who called him, what was it, a handful of weeks ago, Bill, and told him to start growing the mustache.
Right. That's true.
And to never, ever, ever shave it.
Right.
Which apparently he's taken to heart. He will just have to not shave somewhere other than Chicago because
right.
he's been released by the Bears. It's a pretty simple thing. At least this is what it's looking like, and there's a couple of reports filtering in. Mark Trestman, who's the offensive coordinator for the Ravens, lost Joe Flacco yesterday. Flacco played pretty much that entire last drive for the Ravens with a torn ACL. He's done for the year. All they've got is Matt Schaub left on the roster, and Matt Schaub is 97 years old, I think.
Yeah, he's an older gentleman.
So it sounds like the Ravens came sniffing after David Fales, who's on the Bears practice squad. You can go grab a guy off the practice squad. You have a chance to keep him if you elevate him to your active roster. That's what the Bears have chosen to do, and it looks like, I mean, it's entirely possible that Clawson goes over to Baltimore now that they still need a quarterback.
Here's the question, and anybody who saw Jimmy Clawson play, and I use that term loosely, in two different Bears games this year will back me up on this. He is some kind of awful. That
real
guy
bad.
Has no idea what he's doing quarterbacking a football team. Why would another team show any interest in him whatsoever?
Well, if you remember, Mark Trestman was the guy who benched Jay Cutler for one of the late games last year. I believe it was the second to last game of the year last year and went with Jimmy Clawson instead. So I think our explanation here, Bill, has to do with two words, Mark Trestman.
Is that what it is?
Or it's thank God he's no longer here, one of the two.
Yeah, maybe. Uh-huh. Maybe. Yeah. All right, so Jimmy Clawson, no longer a Bear.
Jimmy Clawson's cut, and you don't care.
That's exactly. If this was an ACT test and we had to name this segment, that would be what it is. All right, well, so who do we get now as a backup? Is there some...
Well, Fales will go to the active roster, and it's possible that you pick somebody up and add him to the practice squad. It would be rather... I suppose it's likely enough, but yeah. It'll be David Fales is now your Bears backup.
Can I ask, this guy who filled in yesterday for the Broncos, I had never heard of before, but I've heard people say he's the future of Denver's franchise.
Brock.
He looked actually pretty good. I've only seen little clips of the games. I didn't watch the game yesterday, but I watched a couple of clips this morning. He seemed to know what he was doing.
Yeah, so without going off on a complete and hatred-filled rant, which I'm inclined to do, Brock Osweiler was a pretty decent quarterback for 1 year and a half out of Arizona State. He's immensely tall. Some would say freakishly tall, but those of us over 6'3 know that's it's a derogatory term.
6'8. He's 6'8.
He really is. He's all of 6'8, too, and a nice kid, I'm sure. He looked decent yesterday and competent. He threw so many checkdowns to tight ends and running backs on the empty side, backside of plays. Bears linebackers couldn't find people. I like Owen Daniels a lot. He's a nice guy. He went to Wisconsin. But if Owen Daniels is running around in the middle of the field, uncovered,
right.
You have done something incredibly wrong. You have missed assignment completely.
Right.
Bears couldn't stop Ronnie Hillman, and the best thing you can do for a young quarterback is give him a running game that can get anything it wants throughout the course of the game. Yeah, it's frustrating to watch that offense yesterday for the Bears, but that defense let you down. That defense let Jay Cutler down yesterday.
Too bad. Yeah. Awful. All right, well, thank you. We appreciate it. Yeah, thanks so much, Connor.
I'm going to calm down now. I'm take
You'll be all right. Everything will be okay. Right.
Have a moment.
That's Connor McKnight.
So what do I do with my Clawson jersey now?
Yeah, what does Kevin do? He's got a Clawson jersey. What is he going to do with this, Connor? Is there any idea?
You can your mustache can be put onto the Clawson jersey, and then you can run that out there as a Bears player.
Excellent.
Next week.
That's great news. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Connor.
I didn't know they sold them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're very hard to get, though. So hard to get.
I thought he just made it his own.
No, he bought it. It's legit. Really quickly, at the beginning of the show, for those of you who don't know, I was out all last week. My family took a quick trip out to Costa Rica. My daughter Kylie was working on a project there. She's taking a gap year from college, so she was helping with turtle migration in Costa Rica. And we went and we visited her in Costa Rica, and then she came back with us. You seem confused by this.
Well, and my question is, do the turtles not know how to migrate on their own? They've been doing this for a long time.
They know how to migrate on their own, but because of the area, there's other predators who go after the turtle eggs, and there's a certain kind of turtle out there, and I don't remember the name of it. I apologize for not remembering the name of it, but it's a huge turtle, indigenous to the region, and they're not in great supply. So what happens is they come up on the beach and they lay the eggs, and then other animals come and get at the eggs and ruin it.
I've seen sort of like this, I believe, where the eggs hatch and then the little baby turtles like flap their little flippers and they just break for the shore.
Yeah.
They just bolt.
For the ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's some instinctive thing that I don't understand. I don't know enough
about
turtles.
But the birds will like dive bomb them as they're going. So Kylie was there doing what?
Somehow helping in the process so that doesn't happen. And she
shooing birds away.
She took pictures of the turtles. She told us that the turtles were the size of our dining room table, and we laughed because I didn't think they made turtles that big, but they do. She showed us the pictures of these turtles. They're immense and they're beautiful, and there's a certain kind that, again, I don't remember the name of, but they're incredibly rare, but they have them in the region, And they're very, very protective of these turtles because there's just so few of them. So she was working on that project. Anyway, we went and we found her. We got Kylie, and we went to the rainforest. We went to the volcano and stuff like this. And what I wanted to bring up is this. It's the first time in a long time I've been in this situation where, because of the area we were in, I was not able to use my cell phone at all for a week, and my computer access was limited. I don't have a laptop. I have a desktop computer, so to bring that to Costa Rica would have been ridiculous.
It would have cost more.
So I had to use, on two different occasions, the computer that was there at the hotel just for a minute or two. But I just wanted to say this. Going a week without a cell phone was one of the greatest things in the world to me. I loved not being a slave to it. I loved not, and I use it so sparingly anyway.
I was
going
to say, you're not a slave to it to begin with.
I'm the, of all the people you know, I hope you'll agree, I'm on it the least. I'm only on it when I need to be on it. I'm not much of a texter. My phone does things that
I
don't.
You're the only person who has a rotary cell phone.
I do have a rotary
that I've
cell
ever
phone.
Seen.
A little more costly, but worth every penny of it. But it was just so nice, and there were people there who had souped up versions. Like Kylie was able to use all of her functions on her phone whenever she needed to. But a lot of it, because there's not a lot of satellite coverage in that area, so most people were not on their cell phones. And even though it only goes back to what the world was like 15 or 20 years ago, mm-hmm. it was so nice to see people just engaging and talk to each other and not constantly looking down at a screen in restaurants or on the beach or the pool or whatever. It was nice.
One thing, leatherback turtles. Is that the one you're
turtles.
Talking about?
Okay, it great. Is leatherback turtles.
So, yes, thank you for 630. but it was interesting. I had a conversation with my seven-year-old the other day who volunteered as a punishment that he loses screen time mm-hmm. for 2 weeks, which mm-hmm. I thought was excessive, but good for him. If he thought that grievance was that bad,
wow,
then
he'll make a good judge someday.
But he goes, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I said, I am not kidding you. Like 20 years ago or less, we had none of this.
Yeah.
You had to be, cordless phones we had more longer ago than
right.
that. But I said, we had five channels.
Yeah.
He goes, what did you watch? And
right.
I said, what was on? That was it. And if you didn't like what you were watching on the one television, you went and played a game. No clue. It was 20 minutes of me kind of going, and I felt a little bit like, you don't know how good you kids have it.
I know.
But it was more explanatory of how different things have been. It's been monumentally different in the past
right.
two decades.
But not just from a technology aspect, but just because of what it does to people, how they're not, like, the area we were staying at was stunning. It was so beautiful. I've showed
you
a couple of pictures of it. So the fact that some people would rather, like, if they had access to their cell phone, they would rather be texting and doing stuff, playing, you know, word puzzle games on their phone as opposed to taking in the splendor that surrounded us. That's what disturbs me. And we've all seen this picture 1,000 times of you're in a restaurant, you look over at a table next to you or two tables down, and there's four people there, but nobody's talking to each other. Some of them are playing video games. Some
yes.
of them are texting.
Yeah.
And you just go, why did you guys even go out? Put your phones away for a minute.
Right.
Nature forced us, the world forced us to not have our cell phones, and it was fantastic. I loved it.
Very, very slightly similarly, Patty Vasquez and I went out on Saturday night and we mm-hmm. went to a theater, a comedy performance. And Patty is famous for selfies. That's like kind of her thing.
Yeah.
You don't go 5 minutes with Patty without it. And we're 95% through this performance. And I looked at her and I go, how have we not taken any pictures yet?
After just
we were
a few,
that we yeah. actually immersed ourselves in the moment. It was really nice.
Isn't that crazy, though, that it's now just become the norm instead of just reacting to the world around you? You're texting something, you're playing a game, you're on a, you know, some sort of a device. I love when that's not available.
It cruises, you have to pay for your Wi-Fi.
Oh, you do?
And I'm way too cheap to pay for Wi-Fi because I don't really need it.
Yeah.
There's the ability to unplug for 3 to 7 days. And it's really, really nice. So, but it's a forced moment. And the first day you kind of are like, what do I do with my hands? You know,
right.
I don't know what exactly.
I know.
Although I do have the phone with me so I can grab pictures because I don't have a camera with me anymore.
Yeah.
I have that on my phone.
Yeah. Yeah, that was something else I noticed. Like a couple of years ago, if you'd go to a vacation destination, people had your more standard cameras, and I didn't see that. There wasn't film available anywhere.
No.
In any store. Like,
no.
It used to be there was some display rack of various sorts of films and things. That's just gone. That doesn't happen.
I'm at Disney almost every year.
Yeah.
And as are you. And there used to be a camera shop
right
on Main Street USA, and they've now it's kind of like one little rack for those.
That's all you got.
Yeah, but I see people walking around now with iPads videotaping things.
Yeah,
you know, and I'm like, wow, that's.
I know.
But it really is quite a conversation to have with kids who have grown up with cable and 87,000 channels and dedicated channels, which is very interesting.
Right. One other Costa Rican thing I wanted to tell you about, and actually we'll take a break before I do. I did something that I guess by most people's standards would be considered incredibly daring. Actually, by my own standards.
There,
I don't know if anybody else's standards, but by my own standards, it was incredibly daring. I'll explain exactly what that was and how I live to tell about it next. It's Bill Leff along with Hannah Stanley in for Wendy on WGN. Every once in a while, I do something that surprises even myself. Last week in Costa Rica, my family was looking through all the things in the region to do, and one of the things that was mentioned was zip lining, which I'd always wanted to try, but I'm not really good with heights.
Why did you want to try it?
It looks...
In concept?
When I've seen videos of people doing it, and it looks fantastic, and... they showed in a couple of places in Costa Rica, like at the airport, they have this little demonstration of what it's like when you're up there, and it looks phenomenal.
Like
it is phenomenal.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a video.
They don't just like zip line you from one gate to another.
Although that would be fun.
Yeah.
So what happens is, for people who have never ziplined, you climb up these towers that are several hundred feet high. And then it's really high up. I mean, it sounds high up.
I made a face. That's
when
why
you,
he's
when
justified.
You hear that, you go, well, that sounds like it's really high. But when you're up there,
it's really high.
And when you're up there on a very thin platform and I'm not really good with heights, like I said. And plus the trees that these platforms are built around have poisonous snakes on them. Did I mention that part?
No.
Because part of you goes... Well, I'm up really high, so what I want to do in a situation like this is use the tree as leverage. I'll hold onto the tree, but then you're reminded by your zipline guides to not touch the tree because that snake that you can see right over there is poisonous and it will kill you.
Okay, so don't do that.
There's these little yellow and greenish snakes, and they're not big snakes, and it doesn't matter how big they are because if they bite you, all you need to know is that's poison venom going through your hand. So there's nothing to, there. It's just, you're just in this state of, well,
none
what's the best way to die?
None of this is sounding like, yeah, let's go.
It was, I've never
Did
experienced.
Did they pay you to do this?
No, you pay them and you pay them handsomely.
Mm.
And then if you want pictures of the event, they've taken a bunch of pictures of it for you. And we did that too. We bought the disc of the pictures. But
of course.
I don't remember an event in my lifetime anyway that was both so horrifying and fun at the exact same time. Like, I couldn't figure out if I was really, really having a great time or if I was so scared out of my mind that I didn't know if I was having a good time or not.
Okay, so let's review. You did not get bitten by a snake. We're going to jump ahead. We're not reviewing. We're jumping
ahead.
Saw
a bunch of snakes. Didn't get bitten by any
of them. You saw them while you were ziplining?
No, while you're on the platform waiting to zipline. The
you
platforms
see them in
are
the
built
trees?
Around trees by the platform. And they go, see that snake over there? And we go, yeah. And they go, that's poisonous. That one would kill you. See that one over there? Yeah. That one's also poisonous. That one would kill
Don't
you.
Don't touch those.
Don't touch the snakes is a good life lesson.
Okay. All right. So you lived.
I'm still here.
All right. That's great.
And
you're not still there, which is also good.
You sign when you go to this place. I don't know if it's like this with other ziplining places, but this particular one is. There's like a several-page document that we signed that was all in Spanish. And I don't speak Spanish. I don't read Spanish. But it was all in Spanish. And I signed it. And then I went, when I was done, I'm like, what did I sign that for? I should have read it or had somebody who speaks Spanish read it to me.
Well, it's legalese. So even if it was written in English, you probably wouldn't have read it.
It should have been a picture of a snake and an X through it and a picture of me falling out of a zip line and an X through it.
All right. So then do they harness you? How does this?
Yeah,
is
you're
it a,
harnessed.
A series of levers and pulleys?
You're harnessed. But the weird part is.
This seems very steampunk to me.
There's eight of these on this tour that we went on. You get eight different rides. And each ride
that
only
seems
takes.
Fun.
Yeah, that's fun. But then they said after number six.
It's
we'll show you we'll show you the Tarzan swing. And then they all laugh. All the guys, there's three guides that went in our group. They all laugh. And I thought, well, I bet it's funny. I bet something about the Tarzan swing is funny because they wouldn't just laugh. So what the Tarzan swing is the highest tower of all. They harness you up on it, and then they push you, and then you just fly over this abyss, and then you just go back and forth and back and forth, and you're like 300 feet up, you know? You're so high up, it's insane.
But then how do they bring you back in?
You just, eventually you stop swinging.
So the pendulum stops.
The pendulum at some point just stops.
And then do they lower you?
No, because you're up so high that eventually, as you get slower and slower and slower, on the last one, you're only about 8 feet up. So then they jump up and pull you down and take you off.
That seems
bad. But everyone else on the tour, including my daughter, like Kylie, is like, yeah, let me at the Tarzan swing. So you don't want to at some point go, I'm not going on the Tarzan swing. Because then everybody, you know, they call you names
they
in Spanish,
you.
And I don't know what the names are.
Well, so it shouldn't hurt so much.
El Pollador, they called me.
I don't know what that means.
The Mr. Chicken.
El Pollo.
I was El Pollador.
Okay. Okay. But all right. So you went on this and you get through six of these things and then you're like, I don't want to go on the Tarzan swing. So then what do? You just have to like hike over
I
to the
I swear
seventh,
to you,
eighth?
There was no part of me that wanted to go on the Tarzan swing, but everyone else in our group did it. And I did not want to be the only guy
you
who didn't
do
it.
You are the poster boy for like giving in to peer pressure.
No, I'm like, I never, like peer pressure means nothing to me normally, but I was on foreign
Except
soil
for today.
That day. Because, you know, my daughter went, my wife went, and all these other people went. And I'm like, I can't be the only one that doesn't do the Tarzan swing. So
remind
it.
Me to never have you talk to my kids' school.
No,
it's terrible.
I know. It's an awful life lesson, isn't it?
It's an awful
How
life
did he
lesson.
Die? Peer pressure killed him. He fell off the Tarzan swing and poison snakes got him.
All right. So then you do the Tarzan swing and they yank you off of it.
Yeah, they jump
up
and pull you down and then they unharness you. So then you're safe after that. But then, like, for the rest of the day, like, when I was on the other parts of the rides, I'm still thinking about the Tarzan swing. Like, well, boy, what a horrible way to go would that have been had the hardest, you know? But you could say that about any part of zip
but
lining.
You lived.
Yeah, I'm still around. So it ended happy.
So would you do it again?
Yeah. That's the dumbest part of all is I was scared from the time we walked in until I left. And if somebody said to me today, hey, do you want to go ziplining with us in Costa Rica? I'd go, yeah, I could go with you. Isn't that stupid?
Would you do the Tarzan swing
I would
again?
Still do the Tarzan swing. Except this time I wouldn't beg to be taken off of it as often as I did last week.
So were you?
This
so every
me the whole ride.
Swing?
I swear to you, my wife will back me up. This is the whole thing. I said, I changed my mind. The whole time I'm going back and forth, I'm yelling at them. I've totally changed my mind.
Like, how many
late.
Swings back and forth did you get?
There, you get about maybe a dozen, 10 or a dozen.
So
the first one's the scariest because.
Well, it would be the highest arc.
Yeah.
The broadest.
And then it gets less scary every time until you look down. Like when you look down, you go, I'm still really high up in the air.
But look up and you're still attached.
Yeah, I kept doing that. And I'm not a religious man, but I prayed a lot that day. I'm not religious at all, but
so
that day I was.
How many swings did you go through complaining and crying and whimpering before
all of them.
You stopped?
Everyone.
And even when you were like, okay, I'm almost done.
Even on the bus ride back to the hotel. I was saying I've changed my mind. All right, a break, some news, more show, Bill and Wendy. Oh, Bill and Wendy, but Hannah filling in for Wendy. It's
sure.
WGN. Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff. Hannah Stanley filling in for Wendy today. Wendy will be back with us a week from today on Monday. Joining us in studio right now is Mark Caro. Mark is a longtime writer and columnist for the Chicago Tribune. But those days, Mark, are coming to a very fast end as we find out Wednesday is your last day here, huh?
It is true. I'm not leaving Chicago. I'm not leaving the cultural writing world that I know of. But at the Chicago Tribune, I will not be writing anymore.
Let's talk a little bit about what brought that upon us. the Tribune, the publishing company, made an offer to many of the staffers at the newspaper saying if you've been here X amount of years, they offered them what I guess is considered to be a buyout.
Oh, huh? Yeah, it's absolutely a buyout.
All right, so
I
what
I mean, what it
there?
Is actually, and it's interesting because, I mean, especially, I mean, there have been various rounds of buyouts. There have been layoffs. There have been other workforce reductions and right sizings and all the different phrases they have for it over the years. And there's always this kind of sad element to this and also this sort of like, what's the newspaper coming to or whatever. But I have to say that that this particular instance is a very positive process that they're going through, because, you know, when Sam Zell owned us and then we were going bankrupt, I mean, they laid off a lot of people and it was just horrible. It was a horrible time to be at the paper and to work there and to see people's, you know, careers ending that way. And in this economy, with the financial pressures that the company is facing, which are significant, as everyone knows, they made a very generous offer to let people make the choice of, is this, you know, something I want to take advantage of or not? And there was not, you know, pressure put on people to take it or not to take it in particular. It was just the idea of, look, here's a package you can get. We're going to need to reduce our workforce anyway. They could have just laid a whole bunch of people off. They could have looked around and said, all right, we're going to get rid of this person, this person, this person. And by doing buyouts, A, there were better packages that they'd given than that. There were better packages than they had given, certainly in previous years with these layoffs.
Yeah.
And also it gave people the option of being in control of who left rather than, I mean, so they ceded some control in this. And so it was a very positive thing for the company to have done for the people. And the people who are taking it are happy to have gotten that opportunity.
Were there contingencies on who was eligible to take these?
You had to have worked here for a year, and that was it.
That's not...
And that's it, you know? So everyone was eligible. Yeah. Now, were they definitely going to take everyone? You know, I think they felt if someone was absolutely vital to the paper coming out, they had the right to not take them. But I know in previous years, they have not taken everyone. But in this year, they really made an effort to try to take just about everyone who applied for it. And there are there's a lot of talent and a lot of experience walking out the door, and that is true. I think it'll also give them the opportunity to hire new people who have a lot of the skills that you're going to need going forward, working in the digital world, the video world, and all of that.
Are you okay to name a name or two of some of the columnists and the writers that we may be familiar with?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you know, Dawn Turner, she's a columnist in Metro, Barbara Brotman, Fred Mitchell at the in sports. There have been a bunch of Colleen Masson. He's a wonderful features writer who's going. I'm afraid now if I start listing people, I'm afraid. Kevin Pang, my colleague, we've written about a bunch of food stories, you know, together or separate. A lot of editors who you never would have heard of who are really vital to the operation of that paper.
Lot of people behind the scenes also whose names we may not recognize.
Oh, yeah. And people who sort of help with the production and other departments. I mean, this is a company-wide thing. So, you know, we're fortunate that we're the ones who maybe get a little more attention, but there are people who are working in sales and business and all of these areas. And it's across the board.
Your last day is Wednesday. Will you have reports filed and articles filed that will still continue to appear, or is that it?
I have one story that I just took a break from to come down here. And this year I've been on a beat about global cities. And it's been about sort of Chicago's place in the world. Mm-hmm. And Kathy Bergen, who's a wonderful reporter who is still there, will still be there. She and I have been working on this series, and we've basically gotten a draft in, and it's sort of a big story now. And we've gotten one draft in, and we're sort of fine-tuning it. We're trying to get it into really good shape before I go. And then we'll see. So that'll come out at some point after Wednesday. But and then I was thinking of trying to launch some sort of Bears victory song contest.
Oh,
but
yeah. Might not be time.
I don't know if that's. But I was thinking maybe on the side I would sort of like try to come, because the Cubs won, you know, just caught fire. So.
Yeah.
So and then I could come in and sing more of those, you know, yo ho, it's the Bears.
Or, people love that, Mark.
That's the new song.
Sea shanties
actually.
That's a
people
good.
People love sea shanties.
The new Bears victory song is going to be called "Yo Ho, It's the Bears."
I love it. It's great, Mark. You've been here at this paper full time for 23 years, but
yeah, almost 24,
but 26 overall. You were just doing kind of freelance stuff for a couple of years prior.
Yeah, when I started, they were much more kind of open doored about freelancers doing a lot. So by the time I got hired at the beginning of 92 on the Kid News section, you know, all of its readers now are in their 30s. But so I started off, I got hired actually on the Kid News section. But before that, I was writing kind of a lot of the stuff that I ended up writing later. I was working for the Tempo section, and I had a local music column in the Friday section called Homefront and Local Heroes. I'd spotlight a band every week. And so like Smashing Pumpkins, I still have the cassette demo that they gave me when Billy Corgan had long hair and was working at the used record store over on Broadway. And Material Issue and Urge Overkill and the Jesus Lizard and a lot of these bands. And that was great. And I did a front page investigative series on ticket scalping with Ray Gibson, who was a wonderful reporter. He's no longer with us, but he was great and a really great mentor also. So these are all things I did before I was even hired. And then I got hired on Kid News and I wrote for 9 to 13 year olds. Now, you know, now I understand the mind of 9 to 13 year olds. But back then I was like, what?
Can I tell you what I remember about the Kid News section?
Yes.
I'll never forget this. They had a girl who wrote movie reviews and her name was Tina Yee. And she was, I think she was 12 or 13 years old and she was writing movie reviews. And Godfather 3 came out and she started her review with these words: even though I've never seen Godfather or Godfather 2, and I went, oh no, I'm not sure you should be reviewing movies if you've never seen Godfather or Godfather 2.
Well, this was so long ago that they didn't have video cassettes yet.
Right.
So
right.
Actually, probably did. But no, you know, on demand, you would have actually had to go to the Blockbuster.
It was a lot of work back then. It absolutely was.
Something like that.
We'll talk more to Mark Caro, longtime writer and columnist for the Chicago Tribune. His last day, sadly, is on Wednesday. We'll find out more about Mark and his career next. It's Bill Leff along with Hannah Stanley and for Wendy Snyder on WGN. It's Bill Leff along with Hannah Stanley, who's filling in for Wendy Snyder. Wendy will be back on Monday. Mark Caro's here, but he won't be here much longer. Get him while he's hot. His last day is
I'll
Wednesday.
Come back for you.
Will you come back for me?
I'll
hope
come
you
back
will,
for
Mark.
You, yes. That'll
That's
be nice. I have a little more time now.
I was going to say, nice. Lots of free time.
1:30 every Monday.
All
right. Right here.
Let's do it. 26 years ago, when you first walked through the door, what was your feeling the first time you came through the Tribune?
Wow. No, I grew up in Chicago. So working at the Chicago Tribune, I still feel that way, by the way. I love walking into this building. The Tribune Tower is an awesome place and it's cool to, you know, it's really funny, especially the day after Thanksgiving when I won't be working here anymore. But that's a really kind of fun day to come to work because A, a lot of people aren't there, but B, you have to fight your way through the tourists just to get to the elevators. And it just sort of makes you appreciate that this building has so much history and so much, it's so much a place of Chicago, so much part of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And that is never lost on me. And the Tribune is as well. I mean, it's a real, you know, part of our, you know, whole, you know, landscape here. And again, I grew up with it. And the idea of having my pages, having what I wrote be in its pages was exciting. The idea of seeing Mike Royko actually in the hallways, which I did, or, you know, having Richard Christensen, who's the person who brought me to the Tribune. You know, he's a legendary theater critic. He was the entertainment editor at the time. And he really just took me under his wing and gave me, you know, writing assignments again in that pre-Kid News period. And it was fantastic. No, it was great.
It is an interesting thing. And people have been talking for what, probably a decade about how print is on the decline.
Right.
Publications are down. Actual printing is being declined and diminished. Are we heading towards online only?
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure that that's, I don't know that we are. I just think that what's adjusted, I mean, it's like the print itself isn't what's on the decline and the journalism itself isn't what's on the decline. What's on the decline is the model for which this stuff is paid for. And you've had a lot of very smart people working for a long time trying to figure this out and nobody's come up with the absolute, you know, goldmine sort of answer. And it's tough because people online feel like they, you know, it's, you just, I mean, I do the same thing. You go online, you click, and you don't think you're going to be paying all the time. And so it's harder to get digital subscriptions than it is to get print subscriptions. And the advertising for print has just gone down. And this was accelerated by the recession in 2007, 8, 9. So the advertising has moved online and it's just not as financially, you know, lucrative for papers. You know, I used to say this to people all the time. I'd say, in what other business was it cheaper to get the product delivered to your doorstep
right.
every day than to go to the store and pick it up?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it used to be that subscriptions were so underwritten by the advertising and now they aren't so much. And so people, you know, people on Facebook, they complain about, oh, I have to pay more for it. But this is like, I mean, a newspaper is an impressive thing. It has all these pages of all this work that people have done and it's been laid out and the photographers and the editors and, you know, the printers. And I mean, it just takes a lot of, it's kind of like when you go to see the symphony or something and you just realize how many people are up there, you know, justifying this price. And we're not that expensive given the amount you get. And so it's good for people to sort of still feel the need to pay for us. But the print has become maybe more of a quote unquote premium product. And online is more sort of the everyday thing, and they have to figure out how to sort of get people to just support it no matter what format they're reading it in.
Mark, I was reading a book on vacation last week about a little bit about the newspaper business, and they were talking about how in the 1940s, New York had, ready, 8 newspapers at the same time, and Chicago had 4 or 5, I can't remember, at the same time, and sometimes that wasn't enough.
Right, and there were afternoon editions and morning editions and second pressings and printings and that sort of thing. But the thing of it is that there's no less demand for what we do. I mean, how much time do people spend reading news now? less? I don't think so. I just think that most of it's just in a different place. They're reading it on their phones or they're reading it on their tablets. They're not reading it on a piece of paper. But the demand to know what's going on has only increased. And, you know, I mean, how much money do Twitter and Facebook make? And what are those? Those are just other mechanisms of finding out what's going on. And sometimes it's really localized news if you're talking about your Facebook friends.
Right.
Or, you know, Twitter, you're talking about this, you know, creating this news feed of stuff that you're interested in. But everyone wants that. And, you know, and the Tribune certainly has sort of doubled down on like this watchdog reporting. I mean, these global city stories that I've been doing. There's actually more kind of in-depth stuff going on now than maybe, you know, 10, 15 years ago. But it is tricky to try to pay for everything and have this, you know, have the economy work for the newspaper. And those are things that are sort of unrelated to the quality of the journalism for most of us who work there.
The quality of journalism is really intriguing because I noticed that I will see breaking news start popping up on Twitter. And then before I say anything to anybody or tweet it myself, I'm jumping over to news sources like the Tribune, WGN News, et cetera, to verify it because I'm still relying on reporters and writers who are actually journalistically digging in.
Well, and I'll have conversations with people. They say, well, you know what? I just get my news from Yahoo or Google. I'm like, well, where do you think they're getting it from? You know, someone still has to do the work. So yeah, I think that there's still it's still important to have credible sources, especially when you're dealing with, you know, social media and there's so much stuff that's out there and so much stuff that gets emailed around to everyone that you want that you feel like it's credible if it comes from the Tribune or, you know, the New York Times or something like that.
Is this a good thing or a bad thing? Since you mentioned Yahoo, my Yahoo, and I'm guessing everybody's does this thing where they almost select which stories they want to bring you. They're in some sort of a pecking order. They kind of trace the type of stories you usually click on. And that's what I get at the top of my Yahoo feed. Is that good or is that bad?
I don't know. There's all of this work to try to personalize everything. I mean, I find it weird where I'll look up something on Amazon and then I'll go onto some news page and ads for the thing I just looked for are popping up in front of me. So there's the whole online algorithm formulas for how they figure out who you are and what you're doing. It freaks me out a little bit, but it's probably a good thing. But at the same time, I also think there's something to be said for like a newspaper is telling you this is what's important in the world. And there's some sense of catering to what we think you're going to think is important.
Sure.
But there's also a sense of, hey, you need to know what's going on with ISIS in Paris or whatever else. And because there have been thoughts of, well, maybe at some point, you know, everyone will get their own little customized newspaper and all you'll get is news about the Kardashians because that's what you care about more than this other stuff. And I think it's good to have something that's sort of curated for the general audience and saying, you know what, this is just important for everyone to know.
No question about
general
it.
General curriculum.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
We could do both.
You already know this, but you mean a lot to a lot of people here in the building and people who have read you for years, and you'll be tremendously missed. I know this isn't the last we'll hear of you.
Thank you.
I know you've got a lot more writing in you, but boy, you've done a bang-up job, Mark, for the last quarter of a century, so good for you.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate that. It's been great for me because I've just gotten to do so many different things. I mean, I was, you know, reviewing and movies and going to the Oscars and covering the film business a lot. But then I was also going to Europe with the Chicago Symphony and I was writing about, you know, Charlie Trotter.
Yep.
And I got, you know, somehow inadvertently got foie gras banned in Chicago, which I didn't really do. But the story that I wrote for the front page of the Tribune about foie gras and the fight over that with Charlie Trotter not serving it anymore and then talking about eating Rick Tremonto's liver and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Joe Moore read that story and proposed the foie gras ban, and that ended up leading to a book. So, you know, when I told people back, you know, 8 years ago or 7 years ago that I was working on a book, they assumed it would be film related. I'm like, no, it's about fat duck livers. Because that's a more commercial idea, people.
Yep,
absolutely. So that was the Foie Gras Wars, which Simon & Schuster put out. And you know, and I love doing a book. And I thought I would love to have more books to my name. And I have a few things that I'm working on. And, but then I'm trying to do a good job at the Tribune and I'm trying to be good with my family and take life happens, you know, and at some point it's just, I think that we're in a very sort of entrepreneurial era right now. And I just wrote a story about, you know, entrepreneurs in, you know, Silicon Valley and here and everything else. And sometimes it's like, well, you just sort of, sometimes you have to take a risk and be a little more entrepreneurial with your own career and try some different things. And so that's what I'm doing. And it's all to just sort of thinking, well, my ambitions kind of exceed you know, I just needed to address them and take them seriously, because otherwise I'm just going to let too much time go by.
Keep in touch. All right.
I will.
You promise?
Please. Have me back, please. Just because.
You got it. You absolutely have it.
I'll take the train.
Okay, good. As long as you'll take the train. That's all I care about. Mark, great to see you, and continued success and good luck ahead.
Thank you so much,
Bill. That's Mark Caro, yeah, the Chicago Tribune. Stick around. News is next. And then it's funny that Mark just mentioned the Kardashians and their impact on the news. We'll tell you about a guy who has invented an app that destroys everything Kardashian. You won't find any mention of the Kardashians on it. That's coming up in just a little bit. It's Bill Left along with Hannah Stanley. In for Wendy. And Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Left and Hannah Stanley filling in for Wendy. Wendy will be back a week from today. What if, this is a hypothetical situation, this is just a parallel universe, Hannah, what if there was a parallel world where you didn't have to get any Kardashian news? Wouldn't that be something?
I don't say their names.
Nothing about the Kardashians could filter your way. Well, now that dream is a reality thanks to James Shamsi. He is a startup advisor, a growth hacker, and creator of CardBlock. That's a new app that makes it so you don't have to hear anything about the Kardashians. James, if you don't win the Nobel Prize this year, something's very wrong.
Yeah, the reaction's been good for me.
All right, go to the beginning of this. What exactly happened that made you think up something so miraculous?
Yeah, sure. So I was on Facebook, and there was an earthquake. I can't remember where it was exactly at the moment, but it was a really bad one. And I had a lot of friends around there at the time. And so I was on Facebook and Twitter and everything, trying to look up some news and stuff. And all I could see was news about Kylie Jenner's lip challenge.
Yeah.
And also, I think she released, Kim released her selfie book or something, and it was a bit ridiculous to me that instead of actual news being covered, all I could see was their lips and their butts. And so I was like, yes, this needs to be fixed. And so CardBlock was born, and that was basically designed just to, you know, get rid of all the nonsense about them, and kind of the bigger vision is to replace it with charity links and with links to news that isn't being covered enough by mainstream media. So yeah, that's kind of how it happened.
Well, I was thrilled when I first saw this and thought, clearly someone has answered the prayers of millions.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond the fact that you've blocked this family whose name shall not be mentioned.
Oh, you don't want to even say their
name.
It's
very Harry
All right.
Potter to me. I will not say their name on the air. But I loved the fact that what you've done could be replicated for other things for people. So let's say somebody has a PTSD type trigger that they want to eliminate that. Can we apply this to other things?
For sure, yeah. I've talked to a few companies that want to do that and kind of just want to help pushing that out. And there's lots of ways that you can do it. I mean, you can apply it to parents and children as well with, like, ketones and everything. You can do it with a lot of stuff. I mean, you can just replace or delete content, whether it's, like, porn or something like that. So, yeah, it has uses beyond that. I mean, it's kind of like ad block, but for content. So, yeah, it has huge, huge uses. And there's definitely a few companies that I'm talking to at the moment that want to build that out, more so geared towards the family crowd.
James, how long has CardBlock, how long has this app been up and running? How long have you had it?
It's been up, I think it's been about 3 months now.
Yeah.
And we're still trying to get the kinks out so that we can get it to replace the content with charity links, because that's much harder, and it's also hard to get publishers to talk about it as well, because obviously they're going to lose some traffic. So it's really difficult getting word out there and getting a team together for it. But yeah, that's the bigger vision for it at the moment.
What platforms is it currently available on?
So currently, you can get it on Google Chrome as an extension, and we're also working on the mobile app version as well.
And what I forgive me for this because I'm not as tech savvy as anyone else on the planet, but what does it do? Does it just find the word that Hannah doesn't like mention, but the last name of these girls? Does it just find that word, and as soon as it zeroes in on it, does it just zap a story? Is that kind of what happens?
Exactly that. So it just finds the key terms, and it just takes it off. So it's kind of like ad block in how they do it with just taking away ads. Same thing, but with Kardashians.
Yeah.
I just can't get over how much I love this.
This is the best thing that's ever happened ever in the world.
It is.
There are actually some people that got really angry about it.
Like, hey, wait, who's angry and why are people angry about this?
It's just like crazy fans of the Kardashians. Like I had one guy, I was midway through doing an interview with someone, and I get a call from this person telling me they found my house address, and tells me my address as well. And then says, you have a curfew of 8 p.m., be ready. And so we're like, what do we do?
Yeah.
I mean, our solution was, you know, call the police, but they couldn't do anything about it. So then we were like, well, let's invite some friends over and tell everyone to bring their own knives or something so we can keep the car for ourselves. And so that ended up happening.
Wow.
Interesting. Yeah.
So you were physically threatened over an ad that blocks news reports about a particular family that is considered famous for doing nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they called up, told the address, like, exactly right. I was just like, yeah, be home at 8 p.m. So it was an experience for sure.
That's terrible. That's
awful.
Wow,
it's like, be by the bike racks at 3 o'clock. How very grade school.
Wow.
All right. We've also noticed that you have a formula for going viral, which seems ironic that you're blocking a family that goes viral with every wink of their eye.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a formula to it. I've done a lot of different campaigns as well, like with Free the Nipple, Help Them. I've done a few PR stunts as well. And really, all you need to do is all I do is I look at what's trending in the news and then kind of find a way to exploit that. So the Kardashians are always trending, unfortunately. At the time, like, my last thing was this app that props puppies into your profile pictures. Mm-hmm. So that if you're on Tinder, Tinder's a dating app, as you guys might know. If you've got a picture of a puppy with you on Tinder, you're going to get more swipes. And so I saw there was lots of articles about Tinder that month. So I was like, right, need to find a way to growth hack that, because every month I have a goal of getting myself and my company on the news, because that's all I'm about teaching people how to go viral. And so, yeah, create this app and you can just easily crop pictures of puppies into your profile pictures and get more swipes. So, yeah, it's good fun. You seem to look at what's going on in the news currently and just kind of find a way to exploit that.
So on a day like today, let's just take this day, for example, James, if you wanted something to go viral to get the attention of the world on the internet, what would it surround today?
Mm-hmm. So I'm actually working on two things right now. Obviously, I can't tell what they are completely in case someone steals the idea.
All right.
But Star Wars is one thing right now, which is very easy to drive traffic to. So you always want to think about the journalists, and they always have goals for getting clicks. And so they'll only choose topics that are currently in the news and getting lots of clicks. So, Star Wars is one. Another one is ways that people exploit social media, mostly Instagram models. Mm-hmm. So that's something that can be done there as well, which I'm going to push out very shortly. A great thing is if you go on Facebook and just look on the top right in the trending section, as much as my heart dies a little inside when I see just the nonsense that's there, it's a great little resource to see how you can, find different ways to go viral.
Okay, so what we need to now do is figure out how to insert lightsabers into all of our Tinder pictures.
Yes.
Is that what's going on?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
No, not quite. This one includes puppies. That's all I can say. Puppies and Star Wars.
Puppies and Star Wars.
James, the thing that I've noticed of late on the computer, and I'll be honest with you, I fall for it almost every day, is there'll be some story about something, like it'll say, child stars that got really ugly, and then it'll always say this. This is the part that hooks you. Number 16 will make you wet your pants or something, and you go, well, I got to see what number 16 is then.
Right.
But then it never makes me wet my pants.
That's a tactic a lot of us use. That's one of the really low ones, though. I prefer just creating fun content. It's actually good because number 16 or all that, usually not very good.
No, it doesn't work.
My life has never changed.
Are you okay on time, James? Because I want to talk to you about a person who kind of doesn't exist. Can we talk about Sarah with you in a little bit?
For sure, yeah.
All right. We'll come back, find out who Sarah is. Number 12 will astonish you. It's Bill Leff along with Hannah Stanley on WGN.
10.
Sarah.
It's Bill Leff along with Hannah Stanley, who's filling in for Wendy Snyder. Wendy will be back a week from today. James Shamsie is on the line with us. James is a genius, in my opinion. He's the creator of CardBlock. It's an app where you don't have to hear any idiotic news about the Kardashians in any way, shape, or form. It's available right there.
You don't even have to see it.
You don't even have to see it. They just get rid of it. James, who is Sarah? Explain to us who Sarah is, please.
Sure. So Sarah was a little social experiment I did on my LinkedIn. So I use LinkedIn as a means to contact journalists quite a lot. I created this fake LinkedIn account of Sarah, who's a very attractive lady. And the reason I do that is because whenever I want to make contacts and do outreach, chances are Most people will reject the LinkedIn invite because they don't know who I am, and it's just weird. But if you set up as an attractive girl, they'll accept it. And it's really helpful because when you're trying to plant your stories out there in the media, you need to get those journalist contacts in. And I also use it for new business development as well, because you can get email addresses as well. And it was super interesting because what happened was, when building her profile, obviously gave her an attractive name and an attractive picture, and set up a basic bio of her. I think it was, she was an HR assistant at H&M, and only had been in work for, I think, 2 or 3 months. But what happened was, she actually ended up getting offers from really big companies. I won't say their names in case I get sued or anything, but right. They're one of the leading crowdfunding companies, and a few really big retailers as well, reached out to her and sent her messages. And you have to bear in mind, all these recruiters were guys, reached out and sent her messages, giving her job offers for things that she was clearly not qualified for. I mean, these were like social media jobs and stuff, and she had never worked in social media, and she had only been in the in working life for a few months, and that was in HR. It's ridiculous. And then more than that, she also got really creepy messages as well. Funny thing is, because I wrote this LinkedIn article on it, and it got spread around.
Yeah.
One of the guys that was in there actually saw the article, so I had to block out his name. But it was a very, very interesting little thing, yeah.
Would that kind of be considered catfishing?
To an extent. So when emailing them, I would use my real name.
Mm-hmm.
Or it would be different. So it would be me introducing myself via the fake email, being like, hey, I want to introduce you to James, he's doing this. So it's not catfishing to the extent where, like, I'm not asking to meet up or anything, or not really. The only point of contact they have with them is the one email, which is just introing me.
So what do you learn from this? Because I'm trying to figure out, this doesn't surprise me at all, that the general public, upon not knowing who exactly they're dealing with, would rather deal with an attractive woman than a responsible journalist such as yourself. They just go, I'll just talk to the beautiful woman. Why wouldn't I offer a job, send her a note? But what do you learn from this as you look over this? What do you gain from this?
Yeah, so I mean, the first thing is people suck. The second thing is definitely making your LinkedIn and stuff more presentable. I mean, I know lots of guy friends, for instance, that have ridiculous profile pictures for their LinkedIn and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is, for me as a growth hacker, it's that using that account makes it really easy to push stuff out. But I mean, yeah, that's not really my sphere to know how to handle these situations. Just something I noticed, which is, yeah, really, really sucky.
Yep. But be honest with me, James, you're not surprised by this, are you?
No. I am surprised at the job offers, though. That's not one thing that I expected. I was expecting, you know, the more replies and stuff and the more accepted invites. But the job offers, no. Because it's just so ridiculous. Given her background and completely unrelated industries, that was something I didn't expect at all.
And the part where she doesn't exist. Like, normally if you're hiring somebody, you do a background check and find out from other people what she's like and what she's like to work with. But in this case, she doesn't exist.
Where did you get this picture?
Oh, one of my friends. She allows me to use it.
That's amazing.
I tell her about all these things that I do, yeah.
That's crazy, James. And would you please tell your friend that there's a job here at WGN Radio if she's interested, because we'd like to offer her one. Wow. All right, how can people, if people want in on this card block app of yours, which prevents you from getting any Kardashian news, is there a way for them to do that, James?
Yeah, just head to cardblock.com. So that's CardBlock.com.
That's how easy it is. Well, continued success to you, James. You've got a lot of good ideas out there. There's no doubt about it, so keep them coming.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Appreciate it. That's James Shamsi, who is revolutionizing the internet. Sometimes by lying, sometimes by blocking Kardashian news from us. Either way, I'm fine with it. We'll take a quick break. We'll give you the real news and then a lot more show ahead. It's Bill Leff and Hannah Stanley in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leff and Hannah Stanley, who's filling in for Wendy Snyder today. Wendy will be back a week from today. A few moments ago, we talked to James Shamsi, and James has developed something called the Card Block app. This prevents you from getting any news about the Kardashians. It's a masterstroke. It's a bit of genius is what it is.
He's revolutionized the internet.
He's changed the internet forever. Now, he just told us something that I don't know if it's that surprising, but it just kind of tells us what we already knew. You get along better in the world if you're attractive than if you're not attractive. He was just explaining how on LinkedIn, and for those of you who don't know, LinkedIn is a site. I guess you could use it. Yeah, it's for networking. If you're looking for a job, you could use it to hopefully build something to get yourself another job. Anyway, he found out that if you have a picture of a beautiful girl up there and you fake some sort of a profile for this girl, she will do very, very well. She will get job offers. People will send her notes. They want to be her friend. They want to be her coworker, even though she doesn't exist. And it reminded me of this. I saw this last week while I was gone. You know who Jennifer Lawrence is, of course.
Heard of her.
She's done okay for herself in movies. She's telling Vogue magazine. Now, Jennifer Lawrence, for people who don't know, I would say is one of the more attractive women in films today. She's a very, very pretty girl.
My husband's favorite.
Yeah. She's pretty.
She is pretty.
She dated a couple of guys of some renown, most notably Chris Martin, the singer,
Gwyneth Paltrow's ex.
Gwyneth Paltrow's ex-husband. So now here's what Jennifer Lawrence, is telling Vogue magazine in the latest issue. She says, and I quote here, "No one ever asks me out. I am lonely every Saturday night." And then she goes on to explain how all she wants to do is, you know, meet somebody, spend some time, date somebody, have fun, but for some reason guys are repelled by her because of her loveliness.
I don't know that they're repelled by her or repulsed. I don't think either.
By her.
I think that it's a caliber of people she is in a social circle with.
Yeah.
Either aren't dating her, don't want to date her, whatever.
Yeah.
But the people who would ask her out don't have access to ask her out.
Well, if you're her, though, and you're getting some kind of weird mash note from some guy who's got nothing to do with anything you've ever done.
Right.
And he goes, hey, I'm just a guy. I work at Woolworths, but I really think that you and I should go out and have dinner together. If you're her, you say to yourself, I don't know if that's a good idea.
I don't know who he is.
Right.
Why does he want to date me?
But don't you find it hard to believe that somebody who's that attractive and that talented, I mean, she really has pretty much everything in the world going for her right now. You would think that somewhere, somehow, some guy could break through and go, anything on Saturday? You want to do something Saturday?
The guys who break through really are quickly then arrested. She is, I think, probably very isolated from a lot of new folk.
Isn't that strange?
She would have the people on the movie sets that she's working on.
Yeah.
You know, she would bump into makeup artists or whomever that would be in close contact with her.
Mm-hmm.
But then outside of that, she's not running over to Starbucks, I don't think.
Let's take out of the equation the fact that she's a movie star for just a second, and here's why I want to do that. Over the years, there have been a couple girls that I've known. The first one was a girl I knew in high school. The second was a girl in college. The third, somebody I worked with at another radio station. Each of them incredibly attractive girls, each of them with a similar story. I can't meet a guy because guys just think because I am who I am, you know, and in all three cases, you go, oh, how stuck up is that? But I don't think they meant it in a stuck up way. They just automatically wrote these girls off as, I don't stand a chance with them because they're so attractive.
I don't necessarily buy into that because I feel like there's a lot of people who aren't being asked out, but it's just they're either presenting themselves as unattainable,
right,
or unwelcoming,
yeah,
to those kinds of involvements.
But haven't you known anybody? Because like as I'm thinking about it, there's a couple of people I know and everybody just always says the same thing. How could she, or in one case, a guy, actually, I'll make this a little bit more stretched out. How could that guy, he's got a great job, he's a good looking guy, everything's working for him, and yet nobody seems interested in him?
If you feel like you don't have a chance with that person,
yeah,
you don't necessarily, you know, you hold the secret candle for them.
Oh, maybe.
But you don't really think it's going to actually happen. And it's risky to put yourself out there and be vulnerable and ask. I didn't date a lot because I didn't want to when I was single.
Yeah.
I felt like if there was a connection, it would happen. And that's what happened with my husband. I met him
some other means.
Right.
Yeah.
But I didn't, you know, I had friends who were every Friday and Saturday night, they had a date or a different date or... And that just was never my thing.
And did they
thing.
Like that kind
stressful.
Of thing? That is stressful.
It was very stressful, in my opinion, which is why I didn't go that route. They loved it. They loved going out and talking and having dinners. And
yeah.
And that was, for me, I was just like, no, I'm good.
How would you have done? Now, you have been together with Steve for how many years now?
Married for right at 10.
Okay. How would you do now when so much of the shifting of dating has turned to online type stuff? I don't think I'd stand a chance right now.
I haven't put much thought into it, thank goodness, but it, no, I'm not, I don't know.
Wouldn't
I don't
it have know been that different?
Yeah, for sure, because it was really starting when I started dating my husband.
Yeah.
And it was, here's what it was starting to be less of a social stigma to say that you met somebody online.
Right.
So 15 years ago, you could say, oh, we met online, and people would be like, oh, that's great.
Right.
So I don't know. I know Allison Victoria, who's on HGTV.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful girl, met her husband on Match.com.
So it's possible.
Totally possible.
They say in the ads that it's possible. Mm-hmm. They can't lie. We're getting some calls. We're at 312-981-7200. Let's go to them now. We'll start out with Ron. Hey, Ron, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. How does this affect you, Ron? Have you been with women who are beyond compare?
Oh, yeah? Oh, my God. I am 5'4", very average looking. But in college, back in the early 70s, we had plenty of gorgeous, tall women. Nobody would ask them out, and they'd always complain about it. So I started asking out these most gorgeous women and getting, and they're all 5'8 and 5'9. They're models. And I scored, and it's, I don't mean, you know, that way, but
yeah,
I got dates.
Sure.
And all the other guys in my group would say, you have something extra going, don't you?
Well, the secret is just not being afraid, though, right?
The secret is asking.
That's all it was. That's all it was. So I was dating all the beautiful women at campus and even after college. It was like, all you have to do is, cause, and they are the loneliest. There's no question. They were more lonely than the overweight, average-looking women.
Isn't that strange? Isn't that something?
But this is back in the early 70s, but it was. That's what it was.
How about that? Well, good for you for being brave enough, Ron. That paid off nicely for you.
Yeah, and I end up with a very beautiful wife, and I'd live a happy life. And it's not because of her beauty, by the way, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, I would date heavy women, too, because they were funny and very personable. So I've never had a fear of dating anybody, and I dated everybody.
Excellent.
So.
Good to hear. Well, thank you so much, Ron. Have a good week.
Well, by the way, I got to tell you and Bill and Wendy, I've been listening to you for quite a while now. I have tried getting through you like a dozen times. I didn't make it till this time, so thank you. I think you guys are the most entertaining group on radio.
Ron, you're a genius.
I'm a big fan of yours.
Well read. Thank you so much. Take care. Take care. Bye.
Have a happy Thanksgiving.
All right, take care. Bye. I have told this story on the air before. I'll just tell you a very quick version of it. Years and years ago, I managed a video store. And one of my customers at the video store, I was working in Downers Grove at the time, was a paramedic who got hired often. Anytime they would make a movie in and around Chicago, they would hire this guy to be on set should something go wrong. So he was, you know, pretty regularly in the company of movie people whenever he was in. So he'd rent movies from me. So he was telling me one time they were shooting a movie near here, not exactly in the city, but in the outlying area. And one of the stars of the movie was Molly Ringwald, and Molly Ringwald wasn't really famous yet. She'd only been in one or two movies. And I had seen her in a movie called The Tempest. It's the only place I knew Molly Ringwald from. So he came in and he's renting a movie and he's telling me about her and he goes, you want to hear the weirdest thing about Molly Ringwald? And who would say no to that?
Right, always.
No, please don't tell me the weirdest thing about Molly Ringwald. So he goes, when we're done shooting, she just goes back to her hotel room. Everybody else hangs out. It's when they were doing Breakfast Club. He goes, all the other guys, they all hang out. They all go to clubs and stuff. But Molly Ringwald just sits in her hotel room. She doesn't like to go out. She doesn't know anybody in town. So I go, hey, you know what? And I was kidding at the time. I go, just tell her, you know, there's this guy who runs a video store. He'd love to meet her. And we laughed. So he comes in 3 days later. He goes, hey, I told Molly, and he hands me a phone number. He goes, she wants you to call her. You guys could, you know, hang out, whatever. So I'm just staring at the phone number.
And then you promptly lost it.
I didn't call the number. What? I'm just staring at it, and I'm staring at it. I'm going, yeah, I should call Molly Ringwald and go out with Molly Ringwald. That'd be cool, wouldn't it? And I couldn't do it. And I'm telling my friends about it, and my friends didn't even know who she was because she wasn't really famous yet. They're like, well, just call her. That'd be fun. But for years, I'm like, God, that wouldn't it have been
that number
strange?
Might still work.
I should call her today.
Let's call her and ask.
All right, I'll do that. But it was one of those things with this guy where he's telling me, and it was the same kind of story as Jennifer Lawrence tells. People just assumed, oh, pretty girl, she's in movies. Well, I don't stand any kind of a chance with her.
but she was available.
But you might.
Yeah.
But it is people who have access to them. You hear stories of celebrities who will marry a waitress, or they marry the makeup artist. It's the people that they're around.
Noah Wiley did that.
Yes, Noah Wiley married a makeup artist. Yeah. And I believe Matt Damon's wife was a waitress at a restaurant they were at. And these are people that they just happen to bump into.
Yeah. Sometimes that's
better. And have a connection with.
Hey, Kevin, did Molly Ringwald call? She did not call. All right. Just curious. Shoot. Just checking. All right. We'll take a quick break. If you want to jump in on this or anything, 312-981-7200. We'll take those calls and texts. It's Bill Leff and Hannah Stanley in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. A couple of things before we leave. Rokan coming in just a little bit with Anna DeVlantis. If you're looking for a unique holiday gift, I think I may have found one for you. There's a little story on Huffington Post along with pictures that show this company. I'm trying to find the name of the company. Here's what they do. They make custom cookie cutters that look like you. So if you send them, here it is. It's Copy Pastry is the name of it. Copy Pastry.
Oh, it's clever.
They're out of Hungary, which is ironic very considering it's food
fitting.
Related.
Yes.
So if you send them a picture of yourself, or a loved one, or your pet, or I think they also do groups. Yeah, they do couples also.
Really?
If you send them a picture of you, somebody you love, or somebody you don't like, also they're
that
not going to discriminate.
That would also be good to burn them.
Right. They will then turn that photograph of you or someone you know and love or hate into a cookie cutter, and then you can make a bunch of delicious holiday cookies. The price is a little steep, I'll be honest, because when I looked at this, I'm like, oh, that'd be good for a couple of bucks. It's $21 for the design or $42 if it's a couple. So it's $21 for a solo.
Per person.
But then the postage is extremely high.
Well, it's from Hungary.
Yeah.
So it's international.
Yeah, there's no way to get the price down on
are
the
are they
postage.
Metal or plastic? There's a reason I'm asking.
I can't tell by the photograph.
All right, because if they are in fact metal, you can
they look plastic, by the way.
All right, well, if they are metal, you can use them for pancakes.
Oh, I guess you could, couldn't you? I guess you could. And actually, I have to say this. I will show you the picture just to verify it.
Yeah.
It looks pretty good to me. It really does look. It's not generic looking like I'm eating a picture of somebody, but I don't know who it is. It could
it's
be anybody.
Dave Foley. I'm eating your head. I'm squishing your head.
Right.
I think that would be really cute. I think you could do that with, let's say, kids' birthday parties, kind of a take-home favor. That'd be kind of fun.
Oh, yeah. Except they'd all have to be of the one. You couldn't do a separate one for everybody.
No, I don't want to send it like little Johnny and little Billy would each have their own cookie. I'm not that extravagant.
Yeah.
But, you know, of my child, maybe.
Right.
I don't know.
How come whenever
people... Is
that
weird to eat somebody's head?
No, why would it be weird? How come whenever people give an example and there's kids involved, their
little
names
Johnny.
Are always Johnny, Billy, and Sally?
Because
why
nobody.
Isn't it ever...
Well, I guess Johnny and William is coming back into vogue, and Jonathan
always,
is coming back into
we've
vogue.
We've had, over the shows when people are telling stories and they go, people always want to know why Billy can't read and why Billy can't do
well,
this. And
saying
I go, why
little
is it my
Liam,
name?
I'm not going to name him after the guys in One Direction or something. It's, you know, Zave.
I guess.
Come here, little Zave.
It's just strange to me. Those are the three go-to names. Anytime there's a scenario of a kid not being able to accomplish something, it's always Johnny, Billy, and Sally.
It's also strange to me that I can name at least two members of One Direction.
That's all right.
It's
that's
also
even
worse.
Stranger.
Yeah.
Now, here's something that's going against the grain. They warned us upstairs. The boss has said, please, Bill, Hannah, no matter what you do, do not give away a Christmas tree. Don't do it. You know what? We're rebels. We're giving away a Christmas
Take
tree right now.
Take that upstairs.
Here's what you get. Have a phone ready because you're going to need to call. Don't call yet, but I'll tell you what you could win. One black and red holiday tree with mini lights. This is an artificial desktop holiday tree. It's all courtesy of Tree Time. The same exact people who decorated our studio.
It's gorgeous.
It looks exquisite in here. That's Tree Time. You'll get 200 beautiful, realistic, artificial Christmas trees over at Tree Time. Thousands of unique ornaments and decorations. You can visit them online. Visit Tree Time. This is in person. Visit Tree Time on Pepper Road in Lake Barrington or their website, treetime.com. Now, the boss has said to us, Hannah, under no circumstances give a tree away to a lucky listener who's caller number 14. So right now, if you are caller number 14 at 312-981-7200, you will win the very same black and red holiday tree that I just described. They said under no circumstances give this to caller 14. You and I said, too bad, we're doing it. So call right now, 312-981-7200, and win the tree and get us fired.
Take that upstairs.
Take that upstairs, boss people. You're not the boss of us. Oh, wait a minute.
Yes,
they are the boss of us. This was the worst time to say you are not the boss of us.
Right before we have to go upstairs.
Right, yeah, and meet with them.
Yeah.
So call right now, 312-981-7200. Do your best to be caller 14. Try to time it just perfectly so you're caller 14.
Call now.
If you are, right, call when Hannah said a second and a half ago, you will win that black and red holiday tree. And Tree Time has more of them to give away throughout the week. Now, the week this week is shortened. It's just today, tomorrow, and Wednesday.
Right.
You, though, along with our pal Dane, are doing Thursday's show and Friday's show.
Well, the first half of the first two-fifths.
The first 40% of the show.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. We will be on from 10 to noon on Thanksgiving and Black Friday.
You did this last year and the year before as well, right?
Actually, last year, this is the one-year anniversary of my miracle shift because we were doing mornings on Black Friday. And so I came in. I was so nervous I was going to oversleep that I came in super early. Mm-hmm. I left my house at like 12:30, came here, got here by 1:30 because there was no traffic.
Right.
It was all going west to the outlet mall.
Uh-huh.
So I came in and then sat in with Patty for 30 minutes. And then the person who was supposed to do the shift there and fill in for Nick DiGilio was ill. And there was some miscommunication. And so I did that shift and then I did the morning. It was awesome. I've never felt more alive.
That's a marathon.
It was great.
Kevin, do we have a winner yet? We do. Who is the winner? Can you tell us?
Rebecca in Elmhurst.
Rebecca in Elmhurst, you are the winner of a black and red white holiday tree with mini lights. It's the artificial desktop holiday tree. It's all courtesy of Tree Time. They warned us not to give it away, but we're rebellious. Hannah and I are very rebellious. So you, Rebecca,
Wendy
are the winner.
Have done it.
I don't see Wendy having playing by these rules. Nope.
No.
If you want another chance to win one, tomorrow we will probably be just as rebellious as we are today. And on Wednesday, you can't even measure how rebellious
we'll
be feeling the day before Thanksgiving. So keep listening for that. All right, we're going to come back in a little bit and find out what Ro and Anna have. So stick around. It's Bill Leff along with Hannah Stanley and for Wendy on WGN.